Coming up, it's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley are here. We're going to talk about, well, what else are we going to talk about? The OneDrive fiasco, dare we say? We'll also give you the latest about Windows Threshold, the new update coming soon, an update for Windows Phone, and some great picks of the week. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 438, recorded November 4th, 2015. 011-899-881-999-119-725-3. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/windows to apply for a loan now. And by audible.com to download the free audiobook of your choice. Go to audible.com/windows. And by lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit lynda.com/windows. That's lynda.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft with the great Mary Jo Foley. You know how we know she's a Microsoft watcher? Her blog is allaboutmicrosoft.com. Do you ever write about anything that's not Microsoft there?
No.
No. Then you're true to the name.
True to the name.
And Paul Thurrott, he's true to his name. He's at Thurrott.com. Gives you a little
actually,
more
Leo, it's an adopted name, so it's really one giant sham.
What is Thurrott? Were you given this at Ellis Island when you tried to get in, or what?
No, I was adopted by my stepdad when I was 3. So it's
okay.
French Canadian.
So what's your maiden name?
McKiernan.
Oh, you're a good Irish boy. Yeah. I like that. Now that explains a lot. That actually explains a lot.
Yep.
What is Thurrott?
A French-Canadian?
Canuck. You could be a Canuck. I'm a Canuck. You could be a Canuck.
Sort of Canadian.
Sort of Canadian. Sort of French. All right. I've been trying to keep it up and lively and upbeat and fun because now it gets serious. Paul gets pneumonia.
I'm all choked up.
Or is that TB? Yeah. What the hell, Microsoft? What the hell?
Yep.
Here I am. And I'm, by the way, I think
you're talking, of course, about the Halo 5 multiplayer experience.
Exactly. What a sham.
Yep.
No, I've been one of the people who's been selling it like crazy on the radio show, on this show, everywhere. You get unlimited storage on OneDrive. Yes, we know. In fact, you guys, did you know about this last week? Because you were kind of intimating that there was some kind of flim-flam going on.
We did not know.
So OneDrive is no longer unlimited.
Right. Well, I think what happened last week, though, is because last year, I think, they announced they were doing this.
Right.
And here we are. It's November. It hasn't really happened yet for most people. We both regularly get emails from people saying, hey, you know, I signed up for this. What's going on? I mean, Microsoft publicly had said that they would roll it out by the end of 2015. Yeah. And I think last week what we were just hinting at was not because we didn't know, but rather that, you know, it's getting late in the year. I mean, it seems like we should be hearing about this soon. And, well, we heard about it.
I went from a stunning, let's see. Where's my OneDrive storage? Because I think they said 10 terabytes the last time.
Yeah, you're not going to see that on there. You need to go to the website. To see it.
All right. What is it now? 1 terabyte.
Well, right now, nothing's changed today. But what they've announced is that they are no longer moving to the unlimited storage. And that they're also reducing the amount of storage that people on the free plan are getting.
Oh.
And this is all kinds of terrible. I mean, there's, you know, it's just bad news across the board. And so people who pay for, OneDrive storage through Office 365, will be held to, and this is on the consumer side, we should say, we don't know what's happening to business.
Right.
It will be held to 1 terabyte of storage. And people who are on the freebie side, I think it's 5 gigabytes, right, that they're going to?
Yeah.
That's not 15. Bad. That's kind of commensurate with the industry standard.
It's not bad, but it was more before, right?
Yeah.
And the thing, actually, the weird thing about OneDrive, if you go back and look this up, they've actually gone up and down on the storage before. Mm-hmm. This isn't the first time they reduced it, so it's a little weird. It's a lot weird, I guess.
Yeah. They say, and I don't know if is this credible, that it's because of abusers.
well, I think this is where maybe
where
we can help
start with this.
Yeah. So, I obviously that has happened. I think anyone listening to the show would agree that Microsoft, as the world's biggest software company, could probably figure out a way to fix that particular problem.
Well, Paul,
right?
You're an abuser.
Yes, I am.
You decided with OneDrive to upload all your music, right? What else have you?
I did.
Do you upload? How much is on
all
your
my,
OneDrive?
All my videos.
All your videos.
Yeah, let me look at it. I was just talking about this with Mary Jo, actually.
Yeah. But you know what? Why shouldn't he? Because it was unlimited.
Well,
right?
But my point is going to be that even if you, as Paul has been, if you're aggressive, your own bandwidth limits mean that nothing. You can't store 50 terabytes in the cloud. In fact, you'd be hard pressed to get
50 terabytes.
You'd be hard pressed to get to 10.
I am using more than a terabyte, but it's not much more.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? First of all, I have 20 years of document archives.
But documents are small.
But there must be some videos in there, you know, and big PowerPoints and things. 280 gigabytes of documents. Actually, is that everything? Yeah, 280 gigabytes of documents. I have 6.5 gigabytes of music. There's a picture folder, and then there's
Sky. 5 gigs of music. Okay, that's not unusual. That's good.
There's probably a lot of duplication in there, by the way.
But whatever. It's unlimited.
It's a lump, right. photos is about, altogether, it's about 172 gigabytes-ish. And that is 130 gigabytes of, like, photo and, by the way, home movie archives, right?
Right.
Which some are scans from photos from, you know, literally 45 years ago or whatever. And then my SkyDrive camera roll folder, which, of course, is the phone camera backups, is about 42 gigabytes. So actually, for me, it's interesting. Like, documents is actually the biggest folder. The second biggest, though, is videos. And these are DVD rips. I mean, these are things that are questionable. I mean, I actually do have all my DVDs in the cellar. And the truth is, I'm probably never going to watch any of these videos, but, you know, like I said, it was unlimited. So it's about 275 gigabytes. And so if you add that all together, it's
just barely a terabyte. Yeah.
Terabyte.
I have like a few hundred gigabytes and I'm looking, and it does say it never got to be more than 10 terabytes available. For most people, 10 terabytes would be unlimited. I mean, I don't.
For most people, I think 1 terabyte would probably be.
You'd be hard pressed.
Yeah. You get little bonuses.
I'm at 30 gigs for everything.
30 gigs.
And part of that is not that you don't have more. You might have more, but it's just not practical to upload more than that because you'd be uploading for months.
I mean, I did take some time to upload this stuff. The truth is, before any of this happened, you know, remember I was talking about Dropbox earlier this year. And one of the reasons was, as we moved to Windows 10, OneDrive became less easy to access on the PC because you don't have the placeholders. So you can only sync some folders, so you don't see all of your files, for one thing, from File Explorer. That makes it a lot less usable to me. But it also became a lot more unreliable. I get OneDrive sync errors fairly regularly in Windows 10. And so at some point over the summer, I decided I need this kind of thing to work. Because, you know, I work every day and I use it. I mean, it has to work. And so I switched to Dropbox over time for my important day-to-day stuff.
Oh, just because you couldn't trust OneDrive.
Right. And Dropbox works wonderfully. You have to pay for Dropbox. I mean, you can obviously have a little bit of storage for free, but you really need to pay for it. I don't mind paying for it. I mean, I use it for work. But
right.
I have been treating, let's say, 4 months or so now, I've been treating OneDrive as sort of archive, right? And so when I have a month's worth of stuff that I want to just, I don't want it on the PC, I'm never going to access it from a PC again, I'll put it up in OneDrive. And, you know, my photos are there. That's kind of a problem. My music's there. That doesn't really matter. The truth is I use Groove, but you could use Spotify or Apple Music or whatever service you use. You're going to have that music up in the cloud anyway. So that doesn't really matter to me. I don't know that I've ever watched the video.
This change doesn't affect Groove, right? Is that true?
No, so I guess with Groove, so you get some kind of, I didn't even know they had this, but I guess when you subscribe to Groove Music Pass, you get 100 gigabytes of storage as part of the subscription. And I think the point of that is so that you can put music into OneDrive and access it from Groove. Is that, that's,
yeah,
that
seems, I think so, reasonable. Yep.
So no, that doesn't go away. There are different bonuses. There were Bing bonuses. There was a camera roll bonus, which they're not going to offer going forward, I guess. Loyalty bonus. I don't even know where that came from. I have two enthusiast bonuses, whatever. I don't know
those
where they
like
came
on the
from.
Order of 100 gigabytes or.
Yep. And I mean, obviously, the big one is the Office 365.
That's Office where you got unlimited was by an Office 365.
And today it's 10 something gigs, right? And tomorrow it will be one gig, right? And so that will be a big difference, I guess. But honestly, even with my fairly massive collection of files. I mean, 1 terabyte's working out for me. Yeah.
So this started by my contention that this, on the face of it, this abusers thing is, you know, this is what the cable companies use as an advertising ploy, bandwidth hogs. It's what the cell phone companies use to justify their bandwidth limits.
I don't doubt that they're out there.
I'm sure there are
few. I think those people exist, yes.
But come on,
Is that really the reason?
What's the reason
for this?
What's the real reason?
That's not. I don't think that's the reason.
I don't either.
It's not the reason. I think we can categorically say that is not the reason.
The reason is because Mick Jagger said, "Hey, you get off of my cloud." I don't know.
Nice. They got him for Windows 95. They should get him for this.
Yeah. The new OneDrive ad.
It'll be the new commercial. Yeah. It's not all of your stuff. It's not all in one place. It's not all of your videos.
To the cloud. Oh, never mind.
Right. So I'll tell you what I thought when I first read this.
Yeah.
And the very first thing I thought was, okay, the reason they're doing this is because OneDrive is making no money.
Yep.
And I think that is the reason.
Absolutely the reason.
Right. They were giving away all this storage. Amy Hood, who's the CFO of Microsoft, looked at it one day and said, wait, how are we making money on OneDrive? We're not.
But how much could it be costing them?
It probably doesn't cost them a lot. Well,
I don't think so.
No, it's a lot. I mean,
they have a lot of capacity, right? Because of all the data centers they have all over the world.
Hard drives are cheap.
But it's more complex than that. It's not enough to have a copy of people's data on a hard drive. You need to replicate it. You need to replicate it locally. And you need to replicate it in a geodiverse way so that if there's an earthquake or something.
But I got to point out, Google's doing this.
Well, actually, Google's not doing this. If you look at what they're doing, they're actually getting closer to what Google's doing. The important thing to note here is we haven't heard yet what's happening on the business side. I have a feeling on the business side it is going to be more liberal. But if you look at Google Drive and what they're offering consumers, what they're changing to is actually something very close to what Google is doing with some minor differences that I think are important. For example, I wondered why they didn't say, if you have a Windows phone, you have unlimited photo backup, period. I think they should have and could have done that.
Yep.
Yeah, for their own customers.
We're the only 2%. We could have done this.
Yeah.
Right.
Remember
how Google does unlimited photo storage. They're limiting it to a certain file size or a certain maybe megapixel size, which limits the file size. And so they have it's kind of a hard stop. As pictures get bigger and bigger, they're not saying, hey, your 40 megapixel cameras will be, pictures will be stored in, perfect quality. We're going to cut them down. So even the all-encompassing Google thing is not.
Okay. You're right.
Amazon, by the way, is offering unlimited everything.
They are, yeah.
Very inexpensively, $60 a year.
Yeah.
Amazon strikes me as a fairly frugal company. I mean, I think if people were actually using this service.
Amazon, though, historically has been willing to lose money on stuff to gain to gain business, to gain market share.
By the way, so historically did Microsoft.
Should be. I mean, they're not making money on it, but it's a great, I bet they're making money on Office. I bet, isn't it a good Isn't it a great value?
I guess it's not. I was told that this was.
Think about this if you're Microsoft, right? Here's your choice. You give people unlimited free storage, or you say, you know what? If you subscribe to Office 365 Home or Personal for $69 or $99 a year, we'll give you a terabyte. Okay, so which do you take? You take that one, right? It's like, yeah, you, at least they're going to make something.
A year ago, if they had left this thing at 1 terabyte, I don't know that anyone would have questioned it. I think the one thing well, there's a lot of things I disagree with. The way it was communicated was obviously poor. There's more communication to come, and so we'll learn more, you know, business side, et cetera. They're really not offering anything to people that do need more. So, for example, let's say I did want 2 terabytes of storage, and let's say it costs $200 a year, you know, for that. If I wanted to pay that, why not just offer that? I mean, why not offer that?
They're not even offering an upgrade like that.
They don't have any. I mean, if you want to pay for storage, you can buy 1 or 200 gigabytes of storage.
Yeah.
You can buy Office 365 that gives you a terabyte, and that's the maximum.
Bet they're going to add more, don't you? More plans.
I hope so. It just seems so obvious to me that they should.
Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you? I don't know.
Sorry.
So you come back from Vegas.
You both came back from Vegas sick as
dogs.
Yeah,
we're both coughing.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I have a pretty good chest cold.
It's the airplanes, it's the dry air, it's the slot machines, it's all a mess.
Yeah. Sushi didn't help. So I thought, God knows, I ate enough of it just in case. But as far as this goes, I'm not sure how much of this is pertinent, but I guess obviously there are people abusing it. But I think from Microsoft's perspective, they never wanted to be a cloud storage provider.
Right.
What they wanted to do was offer cloud storage as part of their productivity vision.
Right.
And I really have a hard time believing that some tiny percentage of abusers is ruining it for everybody. I think that they looked at the math of duplicating data for all of their hundreds of millions, billions of users and realized this is actually not possible. You know, it doesn't make sense financially. It really doesn't make sense. I mean, imagine, for example, you went to, and a lot of people probably did do this. You just use OneDrive for your cloud storage, right? You're backing up all your photos. You could have an iPhone, an Android phone, and Windows phone. You're backing up all of your photos to OneDrive. It's automatic. You don't even think about it. Your phone dies someday and you get a new phone and it's okay because that stuff's all up in the cloud. But if something happens to that data center or to that hard drive that stuff's on and it's not duplicate, I mean, what would that conversation be like? Sorry, guys, you know, the hard drive went south. You know how that happens to hard drives. You know, you can't.
Can I say Microsoft something just upbeat?
Yes.
We have a group of seventh graders in the studio today. This is a podcasting class, a seventh grade podcasting class.
Cool.
There's a lot of them. There's a lot of them. Wow. Look at that. Yeah wave. So say hi.
They should probably stick to the audio podcast until they can handle the camera.
You know what? I guess we're in the right business. There's more of them there.
There they are, Leo. Those are the kids that are going to stick the dagger in all of our backs.
They're coming for us. So cheer up,
it's like the zombie horde.
So what you're saying is there's some credibility in Microsoft's contention. This has just cost them too much money.
This is horrible thing to have done. They made a huge mistake in saying unlimited.
It's not technically abuse because they offered us unlimited.
Exactly.
We did what they said.
I found today that it's on YouTube. Find the ad. All of your photos,
All
of your videos,
well, not you.
All of your documents,
you.
All of your data,
you, not you.
All in one place, right. Yes. No, they were very clear about it.
Yeah. So that's, I can understand. What do they don't, what is their moral obligation to?
I know their moral obligation.
Do they have a moral, I mean, seriously,
they have a legal
obligation. They have a legal obligation is the question, right? So,
like, the answer is no, right? Because as somebody asked me today.
Somewhere in the fine print it says.
Is there a class action law? Right, exactly. Microsoft has the right to change this deal at any time. Yeah.
Because I obviously don't have a moral obligation, a legal obligation, but don't they have a moral
obligation? Their legal obligation is to shareholders, and they're doing the right thing for shareholders right here, unfortunately. It's just that it was bad timing. My understanding is that the story was going to break, and Microsoft wanted to be the ones to communicate it. They had to bring it together very quickly.
Yeah.
it was just bad timing. I mean, I woke up the morning yesterday, I guess. It seems like 2 days ago or whatever. But and it was like, what the – what is this? Like how –
yeah.
How – what? And obviously what they would prefer to do is control the message. They would prefer to brief people ahead of time. You know, because they're trying to sell – they should and would try to sell why this is a good thing and here are the positive aspects or here's why we had to do it, whatever it was. And they really didn't have a chance to make that come together, and it's too bad because – not that this, not that people wouldn't have been upset anyway, but just the way it happened was pretty bad.
Yeah, I don't think there is a way they could have put a good face on it. There is no way you could say this was positive for anybody, or except Microsoft, right? Maybe it'll be positive for Microsoft. But I think what really irked a lot of people, and if you go on their blog post now, there's thousands of comments just screaming. And on User Voice, I think they're up to 20,000 complaints or asking Microsoft to bring the storage back. They're not going to. I'm like 99% sure they are not going to do this.
What's
look at the headline of this blog. This is what got people incensed. Storage plans change in pursuit of productivity and collaboration is the title.
Yikes.
If they,
well, you understand how. All right, but based on what I just said, right?
Right.
You can see how that
they
came,
should have
right,
explained that, what that was, which is we decided we don't want to be in the bulk backup business.
Right.
Yep. Sorry. No sorries in here, right?
They call it extreme backup, you know?
Yeah.
There are people who were probably, like in other words, you might have a home server and it's storing backups for all the PCs in your house.
Right.
And they're putting that in OneDrive, you know, that kind of thing. Multiple gigabytes of data per machine.
Right.
Terabytes. I mean, it could be terabytes.
Yeah. I think they could have taken the sting out of this by saying people who already had X amount of storage, you're grandfathered in.
Yeah.
And now going forward, we're going to start shutting the door on this because we don't want to be in the bulk backup business.
There's a lot of weird things going on here. So, for example, let's say you were just using the free storage. In other words, you're paying Microsoft nothing. You don't have Office 365. You're not paying for additional storage. You used to get 15 gigabytes of data. And used to get 15, you know, toward your camera roll, whatever. Now you get 5 gigabytes of data. Now they're throwing these guys a bone for some reason, which is hilarious when you think about it, because they never paid anything. And they're saying, if you fall into this category, we're going to give you a free 1 year subscription to Office 365 Personal. It's a $70 value. It gives you a terabyte of storage for the next year, and you're free to use that. Mm. I have been paying for Office 365. What do I get?
Yeah, what do I get?
Nothing.
Right.
I get nothing. The answer is nothing. So the people who weren't paying you are getting a free gift worth $70. I mean, seriously. I think, in other words, complaining is fine. I complain more and maybe better than most. I'm a complainer. I get it. I'm a professional complainer. But I think, you know, asking them just to kind of bring it back to the way it was, that's not going to happen. I mean, let's try to be productive here. I do think there's a valid complaint to be made about what Mary Jo said, grandfathering in. I think there's a valid complaint to be made. If you're going to reward the freeloaders, could you kindly reward the people who are paying you as well?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, commensurately. Maybe why not give me a free year of Office 365 Home? I'm already paying for it. I mean, you know, I think that would solve a lot of problems. It, you know, it's funny, for all of the complaining and all of the angst and all of the anger and all the craziness that we see around this, virtually no one was using the storage. No one. I mean, some were, of course. We know about the abusers. Some tiny, tiny percentage of people. I have a lot of data, and I'm almost not using a terabyte.
Right.
It doesn't impact me. Right. So who...
Right. Who does it impact? You know, yeah.
Yeah, who is it impacting? I mean, obviously there are people. I'm not minimizing the pain of this, but I suspect that the vast majority of people who are freaked by this are not actually impacted by it.
Yeah, I'm not. So if you have an Office 365 account, you went from infinite to 1 terabyte, but that's really pretty much more than I'll ever use.
You went from infinite to infinite.
Effectively infinite.
Right. Now, that said, I think the bigger issue here is I talked about the reliability stuff and how over the last year, OneDrive has turned into this kind of a mess where I can't really even use it. And I turned to Dropbox, which you have to pay for. The prices are just as high. You know, it's a lot of money. That's when something that used to work doesn't work, that's a breach of trust. When this kind of communication comes out. This is a different kind of trust issue, I think. And the problem with this is we're in a time now where Microsoft is canceling stuff, right? We're fearful for the future of Windows Phone. Media Center is gone. Zune is gone, you know? I mean, at some point, this becomes a kind of a broader trust issue for Microsoft's customers. And, you know, when you can kind of say pragmatically as a business, it makes a lot of sense for you to be aggressive about cutting businesses that don't make money. But when you're a user that relies on those services and you're paying for other Microsoft products that do make a lot of money for Microsoft, it's kind of understandable that there's a kind of a heterogeneous thing going on here where, you know, these things all feed each other and they all work well together. OneDrive is maybe the perfect example of that. And they're, I think they've overstepped a bit. People, like I said, Windows Phone users in particular, should just have unlimited photo backup. I see no reason for them not to. Anyone who has chosen OneDrive for photo backup over the past year should be able to keep that storage and have more for their future photos. I don't understand why they would not do that. This is how you get people into your ecosystem. If you're a OneDrive user, you've got one step in the door. Why would you cut those people off? That's too bad.
Yeah. The part that worries me is if you look at other Microsoft services that are maybe not making that much money, what's going to happen with Skype next?
Ooh, that bothers me.
I have no tips saying anything is going to happen with Skype, but it makes you think because you're like, so Skype for business makes money, just like OneDrive for business makes money. But what about Skype Consumer, right? Right. It's free.
It's the same kind of product. It's the same kind of thing. It's kind of an infrastructure service. It's integrated with everything else that they do. Yeah. Those other products like Office make money. The product itself directly maybe does not. So what's the line? Like, where, you know, storage can be, we can cut storage down to nothing. I mean, what happens? That's a fair point. By the way, not because we think they're going to do it, but anyone logically would say, if they could cut us off here, why wouldn't they cut us off over here?
Yeah.
Why would I subscribe to Groove Music Pass? They're not going to be around a year from now.
They're not going to do that.
What? I don't know. Well, I mean, I would have said that about OneDrive. I mean, in July, the conversation would have been OneDrive's really unreliable, but come on, it's core to what Microsoft's doing. They'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. I just need to get work done today. If they figure it out, I'll come back.
It does. It goes beyond Microsoft. We're right now in the stage where we're convincing people the cloud is a reliable, robust, permanent thing, right?
Yep.
And this just underscores how impermanent it really is.
Right. And that's
damaging
also
the cloud computing, I think.
Yes, Microsoft is in court trying to get the Department of Justice not to sue it to get email out of an Ireland data center because they want people to trust the cloud because it's going to undermine their business. But here they are undermining their own business in the same exact way by just getting rid of something. And by the way, I don't mean to call these people nut jobs. That's not fair. But like the kind of traditional old-fashioned types who like to buy things and own them, and they make this argument that if I, you know, use Office as an example, if I go to Best Buy and I buy the disk and I have a product key, this thing is mine and I can install it as many times as I want going forward on any PC, you know, within limit. Whereas you have a cloud service that you're subscribing to, you don't own it, and the owner of that cloud service can just take it away at any time, and this is what happens, or worse, now what? You know? And it's hard to make an argument contrary to that when cloud services are disappearing or being scaled back in this case, right? I mean, it's you want to kind of believe in it, but when something like this happens, these guys are like, see, you've been telling me not to build a home server, you've been telling me not to buy a NAS,
right?
And now what?
You're giving Dvorak.
Now you buy a NAS.
Don't do it. Don't do it, Microsoft.
I don't know. There's no good answer, but it's just anyway.
Google does this all the time. And by the way, we say exactly the same thing. Was, well, how can I trust you, Google, if every time you something and then you pull it out from under us?
Right.
I guess that's how you run a business.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, we've heard from a number of people on Twitter this week saying, I've been recommending this to my colleagues, my clients.
Right.
Well, and now I have zero credibility.
That's what I'm saying. I've been telling everybody, unlimited, get
Office 365. I still am very confident in saying that Office 365 is still mostly is a no-brainer. It's still a great deal. an individual for $70 a year or a family for $100 a year. It's an incredible value. Terabyte of storage for five people, up to five people, for $100 a year. This is incredible.
Terabyte each, right?
Yeah, for each. That's what I mean. So if you want to, wanted the game system.
Wow, that's good. Okay.
Right, it's still for five each. I mean, it's still one terabyte times each. Five. Right.
That stays.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, as far as we know. Yeah. Sure.
As far as we know. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But so maybe we should talk about OneDrive for Business because we've mentioned that a couple times. So Microsoft also promised that there would be unlimited storage for OneDrive for Business customers, not just the consumer customers. And they won't answer when we're asking them if that is going to go away. And to me, this is a bigger deal because this is where you store all your business files, right? This is the backup for SharePoint. Yeah. This is where people who are using Office 365 for Business are saving their files. Now, I've asked again this week. I had asked them in September if this was going to go to unlimited. And they gave me kind of a, I don't want to say weasel answer.
Obtuse?
But they said to me, we are working towards unlimited storage. We want to make sure you can store all your business files in our cloud. So that was in September. I asked them again this week, and they said, we don't have any comment about what's going on. I had a few readers on my site say they went to customer support and asked them directly this week after this happened, and they couldn't get an answer either about what's going to happen. So that's a little unsettling, I think, for people. Like, either just answer now because people want to know the answer to this, or just say to people, you know what, we haven't figured it out. Just give some update on this to people.
I mean, obviously it's forthcoming. If I had a guess, first of all, I do think they're going to at least offer the chance to buy more storage for businesses because they can charge much higher prices, et cetera. They already offer storage through Azure. I mean, maybe there's going to be a tie-in from Office 365 to Azure where they move you over to whatever average Azure storage types they have. Yep. You know, OneDrive for Business on Azure or something. Yeah, it's, you know, this has the makings of something that was thrown together at the last minute.
It does.
And I hope and expect that they're scrambling to have some better messaging around this. Yeah. It was just, yesterday was not what I would call a good day.
Yeah. But again, going back to our point about, is it making money? I think OneDrive for Business is making money. I think this is why Microsoft's going to really put a lot of support behind this. If I were to guess, I would guess they are going to go to unlimited or make it very possible to go to unlimited with the business side. And you might pay more or pay some additional fee. I mean, you already pay, right, for what you get there. But I just wish.
Yeah, remember
something.
Office, you know? Office 365 for Business is so much more expensive than for consumer.
Right.
You have they've changed the subscription, so this is going to be the wrong name. But what I still have is it was called an Office 365. It was Small Business Pro or something or whatever, but it's $150 a year versus $100 for home. It's five installs, but it's only for that one user. It's per user, right? Not per household. And so if I had five people on Office 365, whatever they call it now, small business, it would be, you know, well, whatever this, $750 a year. It's a crazy amount more than the home version, right? Right. Meanwhile, I could have five people at home for $100 a year. Yeah. So, you know, we're talking about different types of money, you know, and I think the storage costs will be commensurate on that side, which is maybe what makes it more economically viable than is possible for consumers. Because I think a lot of, you know, some people, like I did this. I dumped 200 and whatever it was, 200, let's say 270 gigabytes worth of videos up in the cloud because I could. Mm-hmm. I have never once watched any of those videos. From the cloud.
Yeah, that's kind of the real issue, right? Is that
they're just sitting there.
Yeah. Maybe in some
ways. Microsoft right now is deleting them because I have said this.
They're kind of offended. You know. Like, well, golly, Paul.
No, but here's why. You know, I used to have these things on a Windows server, a home server of some kind. It was actually a small business, Windows Essentials server at last count. And multiple hard drives all over the place, cloud backup to a third-party service. Now, I want to get off of this kind of complex system. And so I have a NAS, and I can put them on the NAS, and they can be replicated drive to drive on the NAS, but their videos, so like, you know, who really cares? When OneDrive comes along and offers this capability, well, there's my offsite backup for this thing. I don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
The point of that backup is my NAS goes south one day, and I have to replace it. And if I can't get those files back, because remember, it's not just videos, it's everything else too, right? That I can get it back from OneDrive slowly, but I can get it back. It was offsite backup. That's all it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, but that's not the game that Microsoft wanted to play. They want you to use that for your day-to-day stuff.
Right.
Not for a Mystery Science Theater video from 8 years ago.
I think that's the problem, is that they misunderstood how real people might use it. And in their view, it's misuse it. They didn't want to spend the money.
Mary Jo, do you remember?
I hope we can't extend this to other money-losing businesses.
Well, that's
like
the
Skype.
That's absolutely the fear.
What, I does understand, anyone... but Bing, how many years? 7 years Bing lost money, right? More than that.
Right.
Oh, listen, Bing can't be around long enough to ever actually make money.
Yeah, right, exactly. They made money this quarter, but it's good. There's a long way to dig out of that hole.
So Peter Bright from Ars Technica has what is perhaps the best headline about this story, which is Microsoft drops unlimited OneDrive storage after people used it for unlimited storage.
Yeah, that's basically it. And that's why the word abuser is a bad word, because nobody abused it. They did what you said to do.
Sure.
Yep.
You know? Sorry.
Well, I guess, but I mean, even within the context of like an individual, you're a consumer, you're a member of a family. I think what they were saying was you have some documents, some photos, some music, and some personal videos associated with your life. Please feel free to store them up in OneDrive.
Right.
But what they were doing was taking a 150 Blu-ray collection that they've ripped to 10 gigabyte files each and pump those up there and on full PC backups for every, you know, a computer in the house, and those are all 10 gigabytes each, and they've jumped, you know, pushed that stuff up there.
Right.
I'm not saying it's abuse, but it's, how do they say it? Extreme backup, certainly.
Extreme. It's a little extreme.
Extremely slow.
Anyway. Yeah. I mean, I think this is going to blow over, and a terabyte is, as people will see, quite a bit still. My whole data drive at home is a terabyte, and I have come close to filling it up, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Microsoft just has the Microsoft of these days has a very different emphasis in terms of consumer versus business, right? Like they'll put up with a lot of things on the business side. They'll find ways to make things work for business customers. And I feel like consumers, you know what? If you guys can come along for the ride, great.
Right.
And our emphasis now is business, pretty much.
Dr. Pizza said, and I think you'd probably agree, that the bigger problem is the change from Windows 8 to Windows 10 and the way it's working.
And the drop, right. Yeah. In other words, it's the reliability and the just availability,
that's
really.
The larger.
The ability to see everything that was in my OneDrive from File Explorer in Windows 8.1 was amazing.
Right.
It was so awesome, you know. And to be able to control what was on your hard drive on a folder-by-folder, file-by-file basis from the UI, fantastic, you know. And it is such a huge loss in Windows 10. It's a big problem.
Okay. All right, let's take a break. Cheer up. Cheer up.
We're in the morning phase now.
Yeah. It's morning in America with a U.
Yeah.
Like Dr. Pizza would spell it. what do they do to distinguish morning and morning in England? They probably don't spell morning in the morning with a U.
I don't know.
These questions and others right after this word from Prosper. Our show today brought to you by the best way to get money, a quick infusion of cash, whether it is to pay off high interest rate credit cards or do some improvements around the house, or even start a business. Prosper, PROSPER.com. The cool thing about this is it's a peer-to-peer lending service. It is not a bank. I think because of lending laws, there's a bank doing the paperwork. But it's not a bank. It is bringing lenders together with people who want to borrow in a peer-to-peer environment. Only the internet can make this happen. And because of it, you can get a fast loan up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days. at a low fixed rate, much lower than your credit card. Prosper.com, if you go there right now, you can just fill out this form very quickly, very easily, without affecting your good credit, and find out how much you could get and what the rate would be. It's dependent on your credit, obviously. It's just a great way to get a quick infusion of money, much better than, please, do not borrow against your credit cards. That's the worst way to do it. Or from your Uncle Vinny. Or from a bank. You don't have to even put on your pants. Just go to prosper.com/windows and find out how much you could borrow and how low your interest rate would be. Prosper.com/windows. Up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days. You may not need it today, but keep this in mind for when you need it. Prosper.com/windows. We thank him for their support of Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, back from Las Vegas. And Microsoft did not do it to you. I thought that they would update Windows Phone or Windows 10 while you were gone, Paul.
On the plane.
Oh, no, they did.
Oh, they did.
Oh, on the plane, yeah. Oh, well, while we were away, we got a phone built. Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. But you could do that. How big could that be?
I did do that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Is that what we're talking about? I'm sorry.
No, we're talking about Windows 10.
Oh.
Yeah.
Microsoft. Oh, poor Paul. I'm sorry.
Microsoft. I'm okay. I'm actually better than I was.
Oh, good. Microsoft pushes Windows 10 even harder than before.
Yeah, this would have been the big controversy of the week if it wasn't for yesterday.
Maybe the whole idea of OneDrive is distracting from this. People are complaining still about the pop-up. You know, if you didn't do it, in some cases, people are saying, I'm getting it anyway. I don't think that's the case.
Well, Mary Jo, Leo, you'll be happy to hear that Microsoft has solved the problem of the pop-up. They're just going to have it automatically download via Windows Update. So, problem solved.
Problem solved. Yep. That is a little annoying. There are lots of people who, for very good reasons, do not want to upgrade.
Yeah, whatever. They don't even need good reasons. They just don't want it. It doesn't, you know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And yet you get nudged and bugged forever, incessantly.
Yeah.
Even when they do update you, you still have to push the button in the end, which we should make sure to say because a lot of people are not saying this. So it comes to your machine, even when they push it to your machine, you still won't just wake up and it will be suddenly you're on Windows 10.
Unless your 10-year-old sneaks in and says, okay.
Exactly. Right.
Is the pop-up, somebody's saying the pop-up is actually threatening, like saying things, you know, your OS is going to expire.
No. I just got the pop-up. Let me see. I took a picture of it. I'll tell you what it says.
Are you sure you got it? Because I was told no one got this.
I got the pop-up.
the pop-up, right.
Yeah, the pop-up on my machine this week said, get your free Windows 10 upgrade. Upgrade now. Learn more. That's all it said. Okay. It didn't threaten anything.
But you can't really get rid of this, right? Because even if you get rid of it, it's going to come back next time you update. I find that so annoying. And I feel like it's almost malware at this point because...
You can hide them, can't you, Paul? I thought you could hide the pop-up somehow.
It doesn't really work.
Not easily,
unless they fixed it, yeah.
Yeah. But the idea now is, you know what? We're going to push it to you. And that's the way it's going to be. If you have recommended updates checked, you're going to get it. And you decide when.
You're talking the pop-up, not Windows.
No, I mean Windows.
No, you do mean Windows.
I mean Windows. Like,
it's on your hard drive.
They're going to download the bits to you. Yeah. If you have automatic updates turned on next year, right? I'm trying to look for what the dates were on this. For users with automatic updates enabled, if you have recommended on... The upgrade will actually initiate on your device.
Yeah. But not critical. Recommended.
Recommended. Then they're going to move to the next phase after that, which is... Or am I getting that wrong? Sorry.
DEFCON 1.
No, optional will be first, right? So if you have optional updates checked when you have automatic updates on and you're a Windows 7 or 8 user, that will start coming to you soon. Then... early next year is when the recommended thing happens. But again, you're the one who has to hit the ultimate button to install this. So don't accidentally hit the button.
I do think it's important to note that according to Microsoft, and we have to kind of take the word for it because it hasn't happened yet, you have to agree to install this. You won't wake up and have it, supposedly.
Right.
Right? In other words, at some point you have to say, yes, I want to do this.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Oh, that's fair.
Yeah.
I would hope it wouldn't just install a new operating system without asking.
Well, I mean, you know.
Well, I was scared. I was one of those people who suddenly looked in my Windows update history on Windows 7 the other day, and I was like, oh, I think it just downloaded Windows 10, and I have something.
No, you showed it to me. I was in New York when this happened.
I was and it checked optional, and is this just going to download? So I was one of those people who was worried about it, just magically installed.
It understandably would freak out anyone. I thought I said my advice to you was don't reboot.
Wow. Yeah, I know.
But I did, and nothing happened.
She doesn't listen to anything.
I don't.
Yeah. It's wasting bandwidth and space, but at least it's not installing.
Right.
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
I'm surprised that they're doing this. I mean, I guess we kind of have come accustomed to this on mobile. And maybe that's the rationale as well. You would get this on mobile, right? So.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, you would, but I don't think even on like an iOS device, they don't actually download it until you say yes.
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Right? I think. I think they have to OK it.
No, I think they might. I've seen a thing saying it's been downloaded. You want to install it?
Yeah.
But there's an argument for that because mobile is a little, it's kind of a different world. And in fact, I think people welcome the fact that Apple does that on mobile. That's one of the sales points, right?
I mean, Windows 10 is very compatible compared to some previous versions of the OS, I guess. That said, there are still incompatibilities, right? I mean, you could run into an issue where you do this upgrade and the app you rely on every day doesn't work. I mean, that's a dangerous situation to get into. And we don't typically see that on mobile. Not yet. Mm-mm. They change over time. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Oh, this is a weird one.
It is. I know they did. They did play up the fact that if you somehow accidentally or intentionally get this on your machine and you don't want it, you have the right to roll back for 30 days to the last OS.
That's not quite.
Gotta cross your fingers that thing works.
I know it's not.
That's not foolproof.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's something else. They're trying to make people feel like you won't be surprised and nothing bad will happen. But still, I think people will be surprised.
And I think you could say something bad has happened if it's downloaded 3 gigabytes to your hard drive that you didn't want.
The other thing they emphasized in that post that I thought was kind of interesting was this notion that how do I get Windows 10 now was the number one support question they got about Windows 10.
Right.
It's like, really? I mean, really?
Don't you know by now?
I don't have access to the data. I'm not saying it's not true, really, but really?
That's how you get 110 million installs in months.
Yeah.
Or two.
So they're really serious about getting to a million.
There was good news in this post, too, not just like,
That's true. That's true.
It was kind of hidden at the very end of the blog post. And they said Microsoft will be providing more information about what is in the cumulative updates. We've heard that users want to know this. And we'll provide different amounts of information to different groups. So everybody will get some. But IT pros will definitely get more because there's more features that they need information on and they need more granular information. So that's good because that was something they were really fighting against and said, you know, people don't really need to know.
I will never understand that. You have to document this stuff. This is not Bush League stuff. People need to know.
Plus, I mean, you want people to be excited about certain things in the updates that are good features to be getting, and they don't even know they're getting them. It's suddenly like, oh, I got that. I didn't know.
Yeah. Right.
We are now at 576. I just checked, and I'm on 565 still.
We're talking about
the insider builds.
And you're on fast. You made sure you run fast.
I thought I was, unless. You know, maybe I should check. Let's check.
I would look. I found that it often takes days.
Right.
And I had this issue one too.
When did this come out? 576.
It came out
last week.
October 29th.
Oh, I changed the slow build, slow ring. I couldn't easily stop them. So I slowed them down.
Yeah, so you put it on fast, check for updates. It may not actually offer it right away. That's the thing. You might have to come back a day or two.
Yeah.
We'll see how long it takes.
Well, I'll just put it on fast. Let's check for updates and see. Yeah, now that I have the Surface Book, I don't mind having sacrificing the Dell to Microsoft's bizarre bugs. And there are bugs. You should not do this unless you really know what you're doing, right? You would agree?
I honestly think this falls into the category of if you need to ask, then
you shouldn't do
probably
it.
Not. Because I do get that question from people, and it's like, well, you know, you're asking me, so.
That means you shouldn't.
Yeah. I'm going to vote no.
Yeah.
I'm going to say.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Just stay away.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it still doesn't see it, but it will, I'm sure.
Yeah, it will over time.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why it doesn't right away. I mean, it's not like there's a queue of people waiting to get this build anymore. I mean, it seems like you should be able to get it when you want it. But yeah, they love to control how things go out over Windows updates.
Let me check over here. Just really. Yeah, there you go. 576. So I have to.
Was that the? This is, you got it.
Well, this is a different machine. I have two Windows machines.
Okay.
Right? So I'll get that right now.
So there wasn't a whole lot in that build, right? 576. That was the build that had the
it's just the Edge casting thing, right?
Right.
Which, by the way, browser. I don't know if you caught this, but people have completely misunderstood what this is. I've seen headlines that say Windows 10 is finally compatible with Chromecast. Nope. It has nothing to do with Chromecast. I mean, they're using the word cast because we're familiar with it. What it really means is that you can cast the display of the browser to a Miracast. Or a DLNA compatible device. So a lot of people have kind of misunderstood that. This capability is already built into, you know, the media apps like you know, Groove and the video. I keep wanting to call it video music. What's it called? Movies and TV.
Movies and TV.
So you might be playing a video on the web. This is a way, I suppose. Well, it would be if they supported protected content. It would be a way to get services that don't have apps for Windows to, you know, play off the browser, and then you could blast it out that way. But actually, that wouldn't work, I suppose, for like Netflix or whatever.
So they
Netflix
say,
does that.
So it is November that we're going to get Threshold 2, the app, yep. Official Threshold 2. Yep. So do we know yet? I mean, is this, I ask every week, is this the gold master?
No.
This is not the gold.
How would you know? Would it have
just
like,
from tips we've been hearing.
Yeah.
There
were rumors about the build being 586. I cannot confirm that. Brad tells me that
that's a fair thing. Because how would you know what the build number would be before?
I know. I don't understand that.
You just don't know.
Supposedly, they're going to sign off on it this week, I guess. Mm-hmm. And the rumor is that the 12th?
The 12th is the latest rumor when it'll be out.
But
last week, the rumor was November 2nd. So I think it's just not ready yet. And we haven't had any additional PC builds yet this week. And if we do, it might be whatever is considered the gold master, but we don't know again if it will be that or not.
Yeah, we'll see on that one.
Yep. Yeah, so there wasn't much else in that build, right? I mean, that day, October 29th, they put out both a Windows 10 mobile and a Windows 10 PC build. That was the first time they'd ever done two builds in a day, in a single day.
Right. That's right.
For
my birthday.
For your birthday. No, there wasn't much else. There was the casting stuff. They fixed Hyper-V nested virtualization. Paul will be happy to hear.
Finally.
That's been killing me.
Yeah, finally. And then, it was just like other fixes and performance updates.
Yeah. By the way, that indicates that they're getting close to the end.
Yeah. The end until Redstone.
Till the next end.
And when Redstone will be next year sometime.
Right. I just heard a recent date of June for Redstone 1, which is kind of
a long time. Okay.
Further out than I thought it was going to be. I thought more like spring. But.
Okay.
This current one they did was basically a one quarter of the year, right, worth of development. Mm-hmm. Redstone, that would be 6 months-ish, twice as big, I guess.
Maybe. They said, the goal is like three builds. I think the ultimate goal is three builds a year that are of the magnitude of something like Threshold.
That many.
Two.
Wow.
I bet they're going to end up with two.
Two seems, every 6 months,
looking at how things are going.
Yeah.
Well, remember that they're going to update apps as they go.
Right.
And, you know, to the average user, this will be a slightly, it'll be a long reboot or whatever. But if you were to go right from the RTM version of Windows 10 to this new build, you'll see the user experience that we're going to, that, you know, consumers will see. And it's somewhat streamlined. You still get that screen where it reboots and you get the, you know, the circle progress, the thing that they have now. But it happened really quick. I triggered it on this computer very recently, you know, because I was traveling last week. I didn't want to do it while I was away. And then it didn't give it to me right away, you know, whatever. Yeah. But I went out in the other room and started working off a laptop because I thought it was going to take a while. Sometimes these things could take 30, 60 minutes, whatever. And I think it only took 15 minutes or so. And for a lot of people, hopefully it happens overnight or whatever. You don't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. It was pretty quick.
Is Windows 10 pretty stable now? With the updates, it's done. You know, you and I, we were talking about, I got a firmware update to the Surface Book.
Yep. Well, that's Surface is another issue. I sort of said this jokingly, but I wasn't joking last week when I said, you know, this is nothing two or three firmware updates can't fix. You know, talking about the battery life stuff, the reliability stuff, that thing you're talking about where where's the mouse?
The pointer disappears in Chrome.
Yeah, and you have to kind of detach the screen and put it back, and then it kind of works.
I think a lot of the issues with the Surface, by the way, Surface Book, are mm-hmm. the detachable screen.
And yep, I do too.
Switching back and forth between GPU yep. and CPU, and because I see the video driver crashes a lot, and then it restarts itself. And
right,
there's
right.
and I have to think it's that unique situation of a detachable.
It's a new thing.
Yeah,
it's a 1.0 device.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they're fixing it.
You know what's
weird
though?
I mean, it's not unreliable.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not. Yeah, it's not.
It's
like
reliable,
it's crazy bad.
But. Just like has been the case with Windows 10, certain things I wasn't have happening
right.
with the Surface
now
Book.
Happen.
Now they are happening. Yeah. Like a lot of people were saying they had that keyboard issue that Paul was talking about where your keyboard just stops working, the physical keyboard. Mm. I didn't have that. Then I applied some firmware updates and now that's happening to me it wasn't before.
I don't.
So the way to fix it is you take the clipboard off. You have to take it off, put it back on, then it fixes it.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't had that in a little while. And so I had gotten the pre-production version of the book and then I got the supposedly shipping version. And the newer one is definitely more stable. You know, there's been a couple of firmware updates that has helped. Right now, I'm embarrassed to say, I don't know why this happened, but there's an icon, you know, you get the little red bang and like a, you know, something's wrong kind of thing. And I thought it was on the networking icon. But actually, it's on the Surface Detach button. It says hardware failure.
I got that too.
It's closed, and it's really hot. It's under the desk here, you know, because I'm docking it. I don't want to pull it out because I don't want to detach the thing, which would make everything we're doing go south. But maybe I should open up the screen just to let it cool down a little bit.
What do you think that is?
I don't know. There's a sleep issue that we think is related to Windows Hello. And it wouldn't surprise me if this is that issue, because when we were in Vegas several times, you know, as you would with a laptop, God forbid, it's 2015, you know, you're working on something and you close the lid,
right?
You pop it in your bag and you go to some other location.
Yeah.
And then you take it out of your bag and you realize, it's 155 degrees in here. This thing has been heating my bag.
Oh, God.
And I think that it's a sleep issue,
it's
right?
Sleeping.
It's not going to sleep properly.
Right.
It's warm right now. And I think it's... I thought I had gotten over it, but I think that's what it is.
Is it the top that gets hot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where
I don't want to, again, it's docked, so I don't want to lift it up.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I haven't had the
top
heat.
Is hot.
I haven't had the heat thing, but I'm having weird problems with Hello. I definitely think it's draining my battery. And then, believe it or not, everybody talks about how easy it is for them to be recognized by Hello. I couldn't get it to recognize me.
Did you do with glasses and without glasses?
Tried both.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, you know what? On a laptop in particular, it has to do with the angle the screen was at the first time you did
it.
Because I found, you know, first time I configured it, I was laying down on the couch.
Yeah, no.
With
bad.
It in front of me.
Bad idea.
And so what I found was I had to kind of, you know, go down. And then it was, there you are. Yeah.
Hello.
So that, you know, you got to. Yeah.
I thought it was because my hair was a mess. I didn't know.
It's
not you.
Hello
it's,
is the face recognition that, when it works, it's great because it just goes, hi, Leo.
It is
and
great.
The whole thing unlocks
really well.
And you're in the desktop. And I think it's reliable. It seems to work better at night for me, which is really strange. So I should just retrain it. We should just retrain it, right?
Right.
You don't have to delete the old one. You just need to do more.
Yeah, I did more, and it's recognizing me now. But I just feel like, you know what? I could enter the PIN just as fast as it unlocks.
You know what bugs me?
You should experiment with getting rid of it and seeing if that fixes your sleep issue.
Yeah, I should.
You know what bugs me? if it doesn't recognize me, I know I want to use the PIN. Every time I have to choose login option, then I can use the PIN. And what I should be able to do is just, it would be, you're right, Mary Jo, if you just left it PIN, you just enter the PIN.
So here's a goofy side effect of this. I use it docked. I'm using it right now. This is the computer of mine. And so, of course, in the morning I get up and I hit the space bar and it wakes up and then says, Windows, hello, looking. It can't see me because the webcam that's on top of my computer is not a Windows Hello camera. The Windows Hello camera is closed. It's inside the lid. But it at least is sophisticated then, because when you hit the bar to, you know, bring the screen, you know, the lock screen up, it actually just presents you with the PIN code. So you can enter it and go.
Okay.
So at least it's smart there.
Yeah. It's a shame, though, when you have something cool like that, that you, the really, the know, truth is, the fastest thing would be to disable it.
Yeah. Well, especially if you're going to sit there going, hello.
You know, it's like, you know. And that's, of course, every time you try to
one,
demo
two, three, four, I'm in.
It works fine when no one's around. The minute you want to show somebody, it's like, well, no, really, this works.
Usually it works great. You're like, that's a great feature. I think I'll spend $2,500 on a new laptop. You know?
Yeah.
Yep. It usually works pretty great.
It's pretty good. When it works, it's so exciting and cool that you go, I'm going to keep using this because it's just great. I mean, that's how it should work.
It's too fast. Sometimes you're
it's instant. Yeah. You know, so,
Did I forget to set a PIN?
What is you're right. Whoa. I'm already in.
Yep.
Okay. Anything else?
Has anything gone right this week?
What a week this has been.
We should talk about the Windows 7 pre-install thing.
What's that?
The Windows 7 pre-install thing. Oh, yes.
So this week, Microsoft quietly updated their lifecycle fact sheet, which is where you can see how long older versions of Windows are supported.
Yeah.
So there was one date missing until this week, which was how long will OEMs be able to get new PCs with Windows 7 pre-installed? And now we know it's until October 31st next year.
They did this last year with that they Halloween was the date. Cutoff.
Yeah, that was for a different thing.
It was, I think,
trick or treat.
Yeah, right.
Right. That was Home Basic and Home Premium and Ultimate being preloaded. And this year, it's Windows 7 Professional. So if you're a business and you want a new PC with Windows 7 Pro preloaded, you should probably get it within the next year, because after that, it's whatever's left in the inventory.
What happens after that? You have to go black market? You like buy a thing on the street in China?
No. A Newegg, like a normal person.
No, you can. Yeah. So after that date, either you go to your usual place where you get your PCs and they might have some inventory left with Windows 7 already on there. Or you have downgrade rights if you're a business and you can buy a Windows 10 PC and downgrade to 7 if you really want to be on 7.
Think of the Dells and HPs of the world are going to stock up on Windows 7 licenses just so they can. I bet they do.
That. I think they totally do.
It's not as pressing as it would have been before Windows 8 came out, right? I mean, I do think there's a general consensus that this is a much better upgrade than Windows 8.
I really have to say, I love Windows 10. It's defaults to desktop. Even with the tablet mode, it doesn't do it unless you say, okay, now you can start asking me.
I love it. By the way,
Nice start menu. I love it.
Yeah. I like it too. I like it. But like I've said to Paul last week when I was talking about our conversation with Terry Myerson, he said to me, why aren't you upgrading all your machines to Windows 10? And I said, I have an older desktop. Right. It works just fine with Windows 7. I'm going to replace it some point in the near term.
I don't live in the bubble.
So I don't want to put Windows 10 on it. It works.
I know this is a shocking concept, but most people don't fix things that aren't broken.
Right.
That's me.
You know? Right.
I know.
I think with Windows, we've been trained because, well, for a variety of reasons, it doesn't really matter why, but that you get Windows with a computer.
Yeah.
I don't think most people ever really considered upgrading ever. I mean, most normal people, it just never was a thing. Like this computer has this thing on it, and I get this other computer, and it has this other new versions of Windows, and I never think about making them the same. I just use each one of them, and it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how most people do it.
I think so.
So it's not unreasonable that people have computers out in the world, and they're running whatever version of Windows. Well, unless they're running Windows 8, in which case, you know, you should probably get off.
What's wrong with you?
No, plus, you know, if you have peripherals that are older, like I have an older printer, I'm like, I don't know if there's a driver. I could go look, obviously, but most people are just
You can roll back for 31 days. What's your worry?
I could print everything for 31 days and then
Please read my PC recovery guide before you do anything like that.
Yes, before I do anything rash.
You know, but most people don't do that either, right? Why would they? They're normal. So.
Nope.
You got to be careful about this kind of thing.
I refer, you'll be glad to know, everybody to your blog. On the radio show, I always get people saying, you know, how do I do a clean install on Windows 10?
Sure.
And I just...
Carefully, Leo.
Well, I say, I don't know, but ask Paul. Ask Paul Thurrott. He'll know. He's the king. I'm happy with Windows 10, and I think most
I love Windows 10. And you know, this is the thing. Like, you know, lately, especially because there's been a lot of bad news. This one drive stuff today is terrible news. I'm not particularly happy with the way they're shoveling Windows 10 at people. I think the thing is so great it stands on its own. Why do you have to do that?
Right.
But for all the kind of negativity, which is just born by circumstance, Windows 10 is awesome. Yeah. I love Windows 10. I really don't have any major issues with Windows 10. And by the way, you recall the first couple of months it was out, never-ending cascade of FUD stories about all these privacy violations and blah, blah, blah. And I looked at all of it, and honestly, all the stuff that people were complaining about for the most part was complete baloney. And there are a couple of things that I would change in the default settings of Windows 10, but nothing major. And I feel like they handled Microsoft set things up pretty well for the most part. I don't really see any big issues there. And so this is that Windows 10 is so good is what makes some of this other stuff so hard to swallow. Right. They should be firing on all cylinders right now. And it's too bad that these other circumstances around Windows 10 are kind of muddying the message here, because Windows 10 is great.
I had trouble with it. You remember I had some stability issues with it because I felt like it was stable. Then I get a cumulative update. Then something was broken. Then mail was this and that. And I feel like that's evened out a lot in recent weeks. I feel like now I can depend on it. Everything's good.
The mail app has gotten significantly better.
Okay. Oh, way better. Way better.
Yeah. I kind of stayed away from it because I didn't...
It's doing pretty well. I'm having very few issues with the mail app.
Do you use this every day? Is this your mail app?
I do. When I'm using Windows 10. Yep.
Yeah. Nice.
This is my beautiful mail app.
It actually is pretty.
I've been using Thunderbird.
Thunderbird.
That's ugly, but it's powerful.
Yeah, I don't like the way it looks.
Yeah, it's really ugly. Yeah. It's old fashioned, but
it really has that communicator 1998 look to it.
You know? Well, for good reason. Okay. Is Windows 10 finished? Somebody in the chat room said it's not finished.
Dallas, it's never going to be finished.
Never.
You know?
No.
That's the beauty of Windows
10. It's a service. It's Windows as a service.
I think by finished, though, Dallas is meaning like finished, like done, like polished.
Oh.
Polished. You know, like usable finished.
Yeah, yes. And we talked about how they moved the schedule and originally, this thing, which was due in October, now November, a TH2 fall update, whatever they're calling it, was kind of like the real Windows. It was the Service Pack 1, right? It's the thing we're always looking for in the Windows world. I do think it meets that bar. And we'll see where they take it from here. But I do think it's in a good space right now.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. I thought it was okay. It was fine when they shipped it in July, honestly. It's just that there were certain components that weren't there. The Edge browser. Still a big problem. The mail app that you were talking about was a problem. Some of the stuff was a little half-baked, but the OS itself, you know, by and large, was pretty much, was there.
Can you address this? It's not in your rundown, but somebody in the chat room did bring it up, this Fortune article by Gordon Kelly. Microsoft admits...
yes,
Windows
automatic 10 spying.
Automatic spying cannot be...
That's awesome.
Well, first, we should say
this comes from
friends
PC
don't
World.
Let friends read Gordon Kelly.
Yeah.
That's our rule.
There you go.
That's incredible.
So let's go to Blair Harley Frank. Hanley Frank.
Okay. What was his headline? Go back to the top there. I just want to see what
The headline. Windows.
No, the other. The
Blair
second article.
Hanley. Microsoft doesn't see Windows 10 mandatory data collection as a privacy risk.
Telemetry data.
It's merely telemetry data. That's what Joe. Before he left, on his way out the door.
Actually, I don't think he's gone yet, right? Isn't he waiting for a TH2 ship?
Yeah, he is.
What he told Blair Hanley Frank at IDG earlier this week, or actually more like a week and a half ago. So
here's the deal.
Address this issue.
Yeah. Let me speak to it generally, because this is, I think, this goes back to a year ago. Remember, Mary Jo and I were out in, actually, I'm sorry, it would have been January. We were out in Redmond. And we were being shuttled between buildings because we were going to record Windows Weekly. And we asked the PR handler, did he just say that he's going to, Terry, he being Terry Meyerson, that Microsoft is going to require users to allow Microsoft to keep the system up to date. And the answer was yes, and they had a plan for it and all that kind of stuff. And at the time, I think a lot of people kind of commingled it with the free upgrade. You know, Windows 10 will be free. And as a result of this freeness, you're going to pay this little bit of a price, which is you're going to allow Microsoft to get their tendrils into the system and keep it up to date. Now, that's not actually the case, right? They're doing this for everybody. If you get Windows 10.
I love these. Kind of a little bit 1984-ish messages.
So by the way, this message is what I was talking about. This has changed. This is the new... What you're going to see with the fall update. This is a new
one. All your files are exactly where you left them.
Yeah, because in other words, you're rebooting and it's taking a long time. What's going on?
Are you erasing my hard drive?
Well, no, they're saying, look, I think it's well done, to be honest. Because they say, look, everything's fine.
It's reassuring.
There are new features that you can be excited about, and all of your stuff will still be there. I think it's the right thing to say. It's good. Yeah. With Windows 10, Mary Jo said it earlier, it's Windows as a service. This is a new world. When you accept this upgrade, you're accepting a new way of doing things. And they're going to enforce it in different ways. For home users, they're just enforcing it, period. For business users, you know, depending on the system you're on, you get a slightly different amount of leeway. But this is the fundamental change in Windows. They're making it more like a mobile OS. If you're not keeping your system up to date, you're hurting the rest of us.
Right.
You know, you Which don't get to play
right.
in the playground. You have to agree to this.
Right.
And a lot of people are going to go down kicking and screaming.
Fair. Yeah, no.
No, I don't either. And to call this a privacy issue is overstating it, because you have very strict rules about this kind of stuff for some vague reason that really has nothing to do with privacy. It's just kind of a worldview thing. This is not about, what secret addresses does he have in his contact list? That's not telemetry data.
Right.
They're trying to make sure the system is as reliable as possible, as secure as possible. That's all this is.
Yeah.
It's not about reading emails. It's not about seeing which websites you're visiting. It's not about invading your privacy. It's so grossly overstated. This kind of thing makes me just cringe. It's so awful.
Yeah.
And for all bad stuff that's going on, I mean, what are we talking about here?
I know. It's the telemetry data being unable to be turned off thing that keeps coming back, right?
Ars
Technica's article, the headline gets quoted, but if you read it, even Ars Technica, when the headline is you can't turn off some of this stuff, but the headline says, but we didn't see any personal data in there.
Because there is no personal data.
We talked about
it's ownership versus subscription.
Yeah.
People think that they own software when, in fact, you've agreed to something that you never even read that explains that you don't own it. But whatever. Yeah. You've got subscription services. You've got, you know, I don't know what you call it, a la carte, pay-as-you-go kind of stuff. Windows as a service, Windows 10, is essentially a subscription service for which you're paying nothing. I mean, someday you may pay for the thing, but it's a service. The point is it has to be kept up to date. You don't get to stay on July 29. You just don't.
Yeah.
You don't get to do it. Yeah. That's the point.
And you make the most important point, which is these security updates, these patches, these fixes are not about you. It's about protecting the internet. And it's what's been happening on mobile, and it's what's going to start happening on desktop. And I agree with that. Apple will push updates, security updates sometimes without even – you don't even know they've done that.
Kicked this off again, like this kind of died down, and what kicked it off again was
– off?
Somebody – it might have been Joe Belfiore said, if you're on the long-term servicing branch – you can shut off the telemetry data, like totally shut it off completely. And then everybody's like, well, if they can do it, why can't we do it? By the way, you could do it.
Just sign up for an enterprise service contract at Microsoft at an exorbitant cost.
I know.
And then you can do whatever you want. That's how it works. First of all, you didn't pay for it at all. Yeah. Next year, you'll pay the normal price for it. But this is part of the agreement. If you don't like it, uninstall it. I mean, I don't...
Or disconnect from the internet.
This notion that I'm not going to help the people around me, that I am actively going to thwart the internet from being safe, you know, to me is just not something I understand.
Right.
Yeah. Seriously, didn't we learn this is like the goods of the many outweigh the good, these are the few or something?
Yeah, it's a Marxist,
everything I need to know
socialist.
I learned from Star Trek.
Let's admit that. It's socialist. Okay. Yeah. Welcome to the People's Republic of Microsoft. Okay.
The internet is not democratic. You know?
No, I'm being facetious because I understand and I think it's the right thing.
No, I know. I know. Yeah. Of course you do.
In fact, I gladly check all the boxes that say, you know,
I
Apple
do this
does
routinely.
This. When you,
I mean,
when you install...
would you like to send us information back that will help
exactly.
this product?
Exactly.
Right. You can
Chrome,
say no.
Firefox.
Right.
You know, whatever.
This yeah. It was that piece that Peter Bright wrote, and it was a good piece.
But it was reasonable.
It was.
Yeah, he was reasonable. It wasn't
right.
a
crazy
headline.
He was like, it's still collecting some data, right. which is not identifiable by user, even when you shut every possible thing off.
Right.
And Microsoft said, yes, it is.
Who on earth could have a problem with that?
Well, it's as long as you understand what the data is, it's telemetry
yep.
data.
Right.
Well, they spell it out. Remember, they issued a post explaining it.
Right.
Yeah.
I think because of Peter Bright's thing and the responses to it. Right. I mean, to be writing something about that today is, wow, it's been yeah. kind of a slow news week. Is there anything where I could slag Microsoft again?
Right.
Let's talk about the same thing again.
Yeah. You it know, was the LTSB, long-term servicing branch, that kicked yeah. that off again this week,
yep.
I think.
Yep.
Yeah. How much
yep.
do you have to pay to get on the long-term servicing branch? Seriously.
Oh,
yeah. How big of a
lot,
company
right?
do you have to be?
Yeah.
How
well,
much
you have
money
to, yeah.
to exchange? Yes.
You have to be a business enterprise with software assurance, and then you have to...
This is the gold package. You don't get this.
Yeah, it
as
is. You have to have the enterprise version of Windows 10.
Right.
So,
I don't mean to minimize compliance because I mean obviously privacy issues are certainly something people should be concerned with. I just don't think there are any here. But you didn't pay for this.
Apparently, I just found out we're paying for it for our six edit stations.
No, are you really? Oh, really? I didn't even think you'd get it for something that small. So if you
what
want
do you mean
to,
small. When you say small.
Six.
No, you can do
well,
it for. No. Yeah, we have the enterprise. We have enterprise, right? And then we yep. have the
software assurance.
Software assurance. We're
how
looking
assured
at,
are you by this license? Would you say? Are you assured?
I'm assured. Yeah. I would just tell the editors, don't. What do you care? Just get it. Just update it. Right? Why don't we do that? Alex Gumbel is shaking his head at me because he says it'll break something. And it's true. I mean, you know what? Moving us over to Windows and verifying that everything worked fine was that 6 months? It took a long time.
Yeah. And which is why you want to be on this contract.
Yeah.
Because you want to be able to push things out, evaluate them, see whether they will impact your environment.
Our workflow relies on those seven yeah. machines. If you, those machines don't work, you don't get no podcast.
Well, now that I know this.
And if you don't get no podcast, daddy don't get no cash.
Right. That's who long-term servicing branch is for. It's for machines that cannot be updated, like without rigorous testing. That's who that is a correct use of long-term.
So it's not for self-indulgent individuals who believe there are privacy issues even when there aren't any.
It's for me, baby. It's for me. No, it's production machines we cannot afford to mess with.
Right.
They have
right.
to work. And they're still running Windows 8, by the way. 8.1.
Wow.
They came with 8.1. I don't know. Are we going to upgrade to 10? I don't know. That's you go to somebody like Alex and you say we're going to upgrade to 10, and it's like he goes, oh, because he now has to test all this stuff, make sure it all works in every conceivable scenario, and that's a big deal. It's a big deal. So
yep.
I don't know what it costs, but I'm paying.
Do
apparently, I'm paying it for seven mm-hmm. machines. So
yeah,
can't be that expensive.
This is my next tip: how to pay for the long-term servicing branch
by doing Audible ads.
Then turn off telemetry. You too.
It's not
can
for,
ignore the needs of the world at great cost.
We don't do it for privacy. We don't. We do it.
No.
Of course not,
because we have to continue the work. The roads must roll, in the words of Mr. Bobby Heinlein. By the way, I love this line in here, and it seems like faint praise. You say Windows 10 is now neck and neck with Macintosh.
Right. Usage.
Usage.
Yeah. So they,
as opposed to sales.
Yeah, so about 9%. Yeah, not for sales. No, it's killing macOS in sales. So Windows 10 is at about 8%. If you add up all of the versions of Mac, it's 8-something percent. I don't remember the exact number.
It says here 10.11 is 2.18%, but then there's other Mac stuff somewhere.
Yeah, there's different versions.
Yeah. 1010 is 3.45.
Yeah, so after that, Windows XP is next.
Yikes. Oh, I guess Windows 8.1. Green slice, that's XP there. Then 8.1 is the red slice.
That big green slice has gotten a lot smaller, but, you know.
Still 11.68%.
Is this, like, seriously, like 18 months? Was it this past April or a year ago, April, that it went out of support?
This past April.
Okay, so 6 months.
Is this ComScore stuff? Where does this
number? No, this is net market share.
Net market share. So these are pretty reliable.
Yep, yep.
Wow. That's a really nice pie chart. That puts it all in perspective. This is of people on the internet being used. I'm amazed that 11, almost 12% still using XP. 56% yeah. Windows 7. 10% 8.1. 8%, let's see. I mean, sorry, 2.54% Windows 8. That's the one that's comparable to Mac OS X.
Yeah. Well, no, that's only one version of Mac OS X.
Oh, yeah, there's two
versions. I mean, yeah. If you... They're not all in the chart, and so that other has
5.81%.
You know, eight versions of Mac OS X are in there, some Linux, whatever.
That's on Therat.com if you want to see the pie chart. Nice article by Brad Sams. All right, let's take a break. Daddy's got to pay for his software assurance licenses.
so we can turn off telemetry data. Yep. It doesn't get turned off by itself,
Leo. It doesn't get turned off by itself, baby. No. Yep. Thank God there's audible.com. That's the place we go, Paul and I do anyway, for our...
I have a pick.
You have a pick? I have a weird pick, and I don't know if I... I'm working on... There's no way to get out of Audible in a kind of standard data format, get all my library out of there, because I have over 400 books in my library. I've been a member for 15 years. But I'm doing it with grep and cut and paste. I'm scraping the page because I want to do a blog post with every book I've ever listened to on Audible.
Nice.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
I did a couple years worth one time, just tech books. It's ponderous.
It's ponderous. You listen to tech books. That's cool. Oh, yeah, you did the stuff
like business. Yeah, business.
Yeah. Like the story of Windows NT. By G. Pascal.
Yeah, Zachary. Showstoppers.
Showstoppers. Great. Stephen Levy's Hackers. What a great book that is. I could listen to that. Soul of a New Machine by Tracy Kidder. They're all on there. These are classics. You got to read these. The new Stephen King, I'm sure, is something that's on Paul's list.
Yeah, that's one of my two picks. Yep, that's a good one.
I'm listening to a book my dad recommended ages ago, and I thought, I put it off, but I did download it. It's called The Righteous Mind, and now I'm totally digging it. And the reason I downloaded it is because he said, you know, this kind of explains the partisan divide in the United States. Why some people, you know, because I don't understand people who don't think like I do, right?
No, neither. Right? No one does.
and this true. Book it's explains universal. It. It's awesome because this guy is a moral psychologist, and he explains where our sense of ethics and morals. And ultimately, politics and religion come from. And it's I can't recommend this book more highly. It's an amazing book. I'm in the middle of it right now, but I just find it fascinating. And it's not what I thought it was at all. I thought it was going to be about politics and religion, but it's really about moral psychology. So that's kind of crazy talk. But if you're interested in kind of a deep dive into how we think and why we think the way we do, this is great. Audible.com, a wonderful place to get 180,000 different books, bestsellers, fiction, nonfiction. And they've got these great deal of the day, the Andromeda Strain, which I love.
Oh, that's my other pick.
I got both your picks.
So the Andromeda Strain, I actually had on my wish list, and I got an email from Audible, and they said, hey, we noticed this thing's on your wish list. It's only $3 today.
Nice.
Play a sample of this, by the way. The reading is really nice.
David Morse kind of does the
kind
reading.
Kind of a classic Audible reading.
300 miles away.
Oh, yeah.
And the large, square, windowless room that served as mission control for Project Scoop.
It's good.
Lieutenant Edgar Comro sat with his feet.
Project Scoop. I love this book. So it's great to play this because I think people think, and in some of the books it is, it's just some guy reading it. But the best Audible books and the ones we recommend are performances. And this guy is an actor.
Tonight, the crew was monitoring the progress.
And he brings it alive.
The Stephen King book is a collection of short stories, and it's all they're all read by different people, and some of them are fantastic. And they're actual there are things I've heard separately, like you could get them just individually as stories.
Yeah.
And they're some of the best readers ever on Audible. Really, really good.
They've done such amazing stuff. Here's a little sample of The Bazaar of Bad Dreams, Stephen King's stories. Lots of different readers, you're right on this
grant
one.
Grant you that. And I have a particular liking for the long ones that create.
Now, this is a guy who reads a lot of Stephen King's stuff, isn't it?
That's Stephen King.
Oh, yeah. His name is Stephen King. Maybe you've heard of him before.
The writer and reader.
The funny thing is, there's more narrators than are even listed there. There's actually many more. In fact, my favorite two are not even listed.
There is only one, as I remember, Stephen King book on the whole Audible thing that's read by Stephen, because he kind of has a strange voice.
Yeah, yeah.
But he didn't he read the one about playing hearts in college? I think he did. And then this book about writing.
Hearts of Atlantis? Is that Hearts of Atlantis?
Hearts of Atlantis, yeah.
I don't remember that.
I can't remember which one he read. You know what? If I click
is there an Audible version of On Writing? It seems like he might have.
Yeah, that's the one, I think, maybe. Yeah, here it is. Yep.
Yeah.
He read that On Writing. And that, by the way, if you're a writer, I mean, people think of Stephen King as a genre writer, not a great writer. He's a great writer. He deserves.
Oh, no, he's a great. That's
he deserves. I mean, he's a Hemingway.
He's a fantastic writer.
Yeah. And listening to this, I was so inspired.
And actually, this most recent book of short stories, there's a couple of horror stories in there, obviously. But really, it kind of spans the gamut. There's everything but maybe there's no like romance story or whatever, but it really isn't just horror.
Good.
Despite the name. Yeah.
He's amazing. Here's the deal. You're going to get a free book. The problem is, as you can see, there are many wonderful choices. That first book is the toughest one you'll have. Because from then on, you're going to have the gold subscription. You get a book a month. And I love it when my renewal is the 22nd of each month. And I go in there on the 23rd and I say, oh, I get the books. I get some books. Audible.com. If you go to audible.com/windows, sign up for the gold account. You pay nothing in the first 30 days. That means you get a book. You also get the daily digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. And if you cancel, you don't pay anything. And you've got 30 days to cancel. You won't. Because you know what? You're going to get hooked. I'm telling you. Such an awesome place. And now you can, by the Audible app on Windows is fabulous. The Audible app on Windows phone is fabulous. Android, iOS, of course. You can also stream it from the website, which means you can now listen on Chromebooks. I mean, there's just so many great books. I'm looking back through the old stuff. There's so many great books. Audible podcast. I'm sorry, just audible.com/windows. First book's free. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley.
Just like with crack.
And it is. It's crack for your mind.
Yeah.
I just love it. Audible podcast. I'm sorry, audible.com/windows. All right, let's continue on. Windows 10 mobile, what's new? Anything? You got a new build?
Yeah, the new build came out the same day as the PC build.
Reliable?
It was mostly fixes and performance improvements, which also means they're getting close to TH2 for phone. Battery life was improved. They fixed a lot of things like Hey Cortana, where it wasn't working on some devices. So, yeah, mostly just fixes.
Yeah, mostly just fixes. It's pretty clean. I mean, I feel bad about Windows 10 Mobile because I don't feel like anyone's really going to use it. I mean, it's great. It really is. It's come together very nicely. I mean, obviously, we had some iffy months there. We weren't getting builds for a long time, several times, and you know, whatever. The apps are going to be a problem forever. There's no mobile payment system that makes any sense. All that kind of stuff. But, you know, the system itself is so solid. It's hard to...
Sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard to kind of... I mean, it's hard to recommend, but it's so great.
You know, the way of technology is paved with tears.
Yeah.
Because, I can, you know, starting with the Amiga... really? And VOS. I can think of so many technologies were so clearly superior, really well done, but for whatever reason, the market didn't embrace them, and this is one of them.
Yeah, I've been on the receiving end of this one too many times.
Yeah,
but
you have.
Yes. I thought by embracing Windows, I'd be set for the rest of my life, and it worked out for a while. But
sorry. Oh.
We mentioned briefly the firmware updates for the Surface Book. And those were also for Surface Pro 4, yeah? Is it
By the
same?
Way, God, I'm sorry.
Are they the same firmware updates?
Two sets now, they've been the exact same firmware updates. Interesting.
Very. So like do I said, have just a Surface Pro 4 with a built-in keyboard?
Yep.
What? Well, and a built and a second GPU, a bigger screen. Yep. You know, there's extra stuff going on there. I mean, there's obviously it has the USB ports that you don't see on the regular Surface. But yeah, I mean, it's. I think the processors are slightly different, isn't it? Like if you have an i7, it's a 6600U versus a 6500U.
Okay, that's.
But I mean, they both have this. It's the same basic architecture, you know, 16 gigs of RAM.
Well, that makes sense. Storage. Why would you design two completely different things? And this way, you can do.
Yeah. Well, remember, you're getting extra stuff on the book. I forget the acronym exactly. NVMe based SSD, I think, is only on the book. You don't get that on Surface Pro 4, I believe. I could be completely wrong, but I think that's the case. Obviously, the GPU thing is completely different. On Surface Book, but
just tell me the Surface Book's better, and I'll be happy.
It is. I mean, it is better.
It's a lot more expensive.
Well, I mean, think about it. We Mac versus PC for the past several years. It's the same basic architecture. You buy a MacBook Air, you buy a Windows laptop. Which one was better? I mean, they're the same
stuff,
chipset and stuff. I mean, by nature, they have to be.
All right.
I do find it interesting that they're exactly the same firmware update, but
yeah, that's telling, isn't it?
But firmware, in Microsoft's sort of extended use of the term firmware. I mean, it's not just the BIOS, UEFI firmware. It's the hardware drivers is what they're talking about, and so the hardware components to date have for the firmware updates anyway have been shared. So the display driver, of course, comes from Intel. It works across both. The chipset drivers come from Intel, of course, work across both, et cetera. They're not identical inside, but they're very, very close. They share, the drivers so far. I do think in the future we'll see Surface Book specific firmware updates. I mean, I think you have to. There's a whole latch mechanism that's completely different. The extra GPU is completely different. There are things that are different, and so I think that will happen. But we've had two sets so far, and they've both been identical so far.
And the band. I guess I didn't realize this. Mary Jo, you've been wearing the Microsoft band too.
I have.
Yeah.
Yep. So, I have it charging right here.
We did a little quick review. Megan Maroney bought one, and we talked about it on iOS today because it does work with iOS, which is nice.
Yeah.
One of the things she said, and I think you have a fix for this, the watch didn't stay on for her. You can keep the watch face on all the time, right?
You can turn on watch mode. Can you turn off the face the whole time? I'm not sure you could do that.
Oh, so
in other words, there's
like a low power mode that keeps the watch face.
Yeah, it literally has a watch and a date on it, and you could leave that on all the time. But the more common thing is to enable the gesture. So when you flip your wrist around, it comes on because that's when you look at it, and then it goes off pretty quickly. And obviously, the goal is to preserve battery life and so forth. So how did you guys like it? What was your
Well, I had never worn a fitness band before, so this was the very first time I had ever even tried any fitness band. And I liked knowing my steps. That was good. I liked the glanceability, like if a phone call came in or a notification, I could just look like, oh, yeah, I can ignore that or I cannot ignore that. I don't really care about the things like sleep monitoring. I'm like, yeah, I guess some people would care. I don't know who, but
a lot of people. That's the new thing. Yeah. You didn't know that?
Have you tracked a walk yet? Have you done this?
Yep, I tracked the walk.
Where it makes a map? That's cool. I mean,
that was fun.
It makes a map of your walk because it has a built-in GPS, and then you can upload it. Yeah. Megan liked it, but she's only had it for a few days. She's a fitness person.
Okay, right. So
she's worn many fitness bands before.
Yeah.
What'd she say?
I think her full review is yet to come, but so far so good. I think she's.
I think with wearables right now on your wrist, anyway, you have kind of a gamut, and on one edge of the gamut are like extreme minimalist fitness devices, right? Some of them don't even have displays. Some of them, like the most Fitbits, have like a tiny display.
I love my Misfit. Yeah. It's minimal. And
they serve a purpose. Right. On the far end of the other end of the scale, though, is like full-featured smartwatches, Apple Watch, the Android Wear stuff and everything. And I think for me, band hits in the middle at the right place for me because it's the stuff I care about and it's not the stuff I don't care about. So it does have the fitness stuff, which I like. I like to track steps, especially. I stopped tracking sleep because it's so depressing. I apparently sleep very horribly. And so thank you for telling me that. But it has, like Mary Jo kind of alluded to, it has just the right amount of notifications. And so when I get a text message, a phone call, I turn off email. I don't want to get one for every email. Obviously, that'd be too much. You could turn it on for Twitter. You could turn it on for Facebook. I like those kinds of things because oftentimes you'd be walking around, the phone's in your pocket or bag or whatever, and your wrist buzz, you look down, you can see what it is, and then you can decide whether I need to deal with it. And it's neat on that note because if you just had your phone, you might find yourself stopping, pulling it out, looking at it, and saying, oh, I don't really have to deal with this.
Right.
Whereas in this case, you get like a neat little – it's not an essential function, but I think this is the one thing that from the band all the way through the smartwatches does very effectively. Just it gives you that nicer notification where you can say, meh, you know, yes or no. Yeah. I have to deal with this now. It's nice.
Yeah, I saw some people saying they thought it was kind of clunky and uncomfortable. I actually forgot I was wearing it most of the time.
Yeah, I don't find
and
it to
I
be
wear it a little bit loose intentionally. Yep. It still picks up all the sensor data, but I found it to be very comfortable, easy to read, the display. I thought from an ergonomic standpoint it was good. The one weird thing I've had is the clasp getting very scratched. And I take it off when I type because it's a little bit in the way. But
I take off my wristwatch
when
I type.
On your inside or outside of your wrist?
Outside. The clasp on the inside, the face on the outside.
Right.
Yep. Which makes it a little hard to read, right? You have to kind of angle.
Yeah, I just kind of was like.
I was suggesting Megan wear it military style with the face inside.
A lot of people do that. I don't know why. I kind of prefer it on the outside like this.
You know what? Yeah. You get to wear it any way you want. I do think that that's a marketing issue for Microsoft. It looks uncomfortable. It looks
the first generation.
Compared
to Gen 1, which was, it didn't have the curved glass and I don't know what the material was, but it was something that looked just like, yikes, I don't want any part of that. This new material, it's just very, I think it looks a lot sleeker. It looks more comfortable.
So I think it's an important message because everybody I've talked to, including you two, say it feels fine, but it doesn't look like it feels fine.
Yeah.
Some people, have said, like, you know, it looks kind of clunky and big. I'm not sure I could even show it to you, like, how big it kind of looks under the wrist there. But I wear it a little loose as well. I think I never notice it. Mm-hmm. The other one, I used to have issues, you know, you'd hit the laptop lid while you were typing. And you used to kind of, you feel it. And sometimes if I was typing long enough on a laptop, I'd take it off just to, so I didn't have to deal with it. I never noticed that. I think it's just because it's looser. Mm-hmm. You know, the other one was so tight on my wrist, I didn't have a chance. I couldn't wear it looser. This one's a little bigger.
Right. It's unusual because most of the time those sensors need to be kind of pressed against your skin.
Yeah.
Yep. At least the heart rate sensor.
No, I use it on the same walks that I've always gone on. It measures things exactly the same. The maps are just as accurate. I go a mile. The first mile, it's the exact same place. It is the exact same place it's always been. The second mile, same thing. It's as accurate. I mean, that stuff's working.
On the Apple Watch, they recommend you take a 20-minute outside walk to calibrate your steps. Do you need to do that with the band?
No.
Do they say anything like that?
No.
But do you enter in then your height or your stride?
Yeah, you have to put in your particulars.
Height and weight.
But I think it's, again, if you're turning on GPS, it uses that as well, right? So it's probably doing a triangulation of all this data to get to get this as accurate as it can.
Yeah, I liked it. I not being a fitness person, not caring about like weightlifting or golfing or biking, it's not as useful for me just because I think it's more of a fitness device, even though it lets you do other things.
There should be an Xbox mode. It's like you're really kicking ass.
Xbox today, Paul. A lot of untapped risk beer tracking. Yeah. Now we're getting serious.
Yeah.
The one arm, what do you call
this? What does it do with weightlifting? It can't measure your reps, can it? Or can it?
No. When you do an exercise like that, you just tell it you're exercising. And so, for example, I haven't actually played basketball this year yet, but if I were to play basketball, I would normally play tonight, but I'm sick. I start an exercise, and then when I'm done, I end the exercise. And what it's measuring over the course of that exercise is, well, a million things, but it collects more data than Windows 10. It's right. Okay. So it
it's telemetry, Paul. That's telemetry.
Really just violating my privacy the entire time. You know, it collects all that data, and then you have kind of a look at that time period, and it will give you information like about rate. Cool-down periods and things okay. like that.
Yeah, I think heart rate is the primary.
Yeah, heart rate is the primary like one, obviously. Yeah. But
how is
but you
the
can
heart
do an
rate?
Exercise where you're climbing stairs, and it can measure that.
Right. Well, it has elevation because it has a barometric pressure. Yeah. So how accurate is the heart rate when you're exercising? Because some of these things, it isn't accurate unless you're standing still.
So I have to go back a couple of years on this one because I've been testing the heart rate thing against what I know to be the right measurement, which is when you wear a chest strap.
Right.
Which I got with the elliptical thing that's behind me. I measured a couple of years ago, like Fitbit and the Nike Fuel Band, and the Nike Fuel Band never did heart rate, so never mind that one. But different devices, you know, measure things a little differently. It can't do a regular heart rate measurement, right? It can't do continuous heart rate measurement. So what it has to do is kind of ping you occasionally. And I would say that it's pretty accurate. It's can be wildly inaccurate depending on where you are. Like if you get on the elliptical and you really push hard, the elliptical will display what I think to be the correct heart rate. And then the band will kind of catch up over time. And so I think it's just it's accurate enough for what it is. I mean, it's not because it can't be continuous. It can never really be. And plus it's also beaming a light into your wrist. It's not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not as good of a contact.
Apple Watch seems to do well even when you're moving. And that's the only one I've found to be fairly accurate even when you're exercising vigorously.
Yeah, I think the steps to me has been very accurate. And that one, take that as you will, because how did I measure my steps? But again, that was something I did look at with the
month. Yeah, you know. I mean, you know.
Kind yeah. Of. Well, you can do things like I can measure a mile, you know, right. and you know, I can sort of, I haven't done this with this exact device. What I can tell you is that with this exact device, it's tracking to what the other device did. And I did with that device compare it to devices where I had checked accuracy and so forth. And so heart rate, you know, it's going to be all over the map. I think the steps is pretty accurate. But the one thing we keep talking about with these devices is important to remember is if you're using one device, it doesn't matter in some ways how accurate it is, as long as it's accurate to itself. You know, you want to improve how fast you walk a mile, maybe run a mile if you're doing like that kind of thing, or improve your golf game or whatever it is you're trying to improve. I mean, as long as the data is accurate to itself, you can see whether or not you're improving as you go. You know, you don't care if this is accurate.
You're saying relative is what matters.
Relative to itself,
yeah.
Right? Because you're just using this one thing.
Absolute data, but relative data. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I think so.
I was stunned to see how much I walk in New York.
Good.
I never really had an idea. I mean, I'm walking like most days 4 to 5 miles.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah, just that's great.
Going around town.
That's what I do when I'm in New York. I just get out there and I go all over because I love to walk around in the
city. If I walk, and I didn't walk today, for example, I should have, but I didn't. That's like 5,000 steps I can get in.
Yeah.
But that's probably less than half of what you would walk in an average day walking around because that's, 40 minutes is probably 2 miles-ish.
Right.
So if you're walking 4 to 5 miles, you're talking about like 11, 12,000 steps, probably something like that.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
Battery life real quickly. Somebody wants to know charging time and battery.
Exactly the same as before. It's 2 days if you don't use GPS. If you do use GPS, you need to charge it once a day. Is what I found.
Okay. There you have it. The Watch Report. Microsoft.
And by the way, I like it a lot and I use it every day. I love it.
Cool. I saw today that you could sign up now for beta for Cortana on iOS, right?
Yeah, I assume that's closed by now. Because it was a limited test. Did they already do it?
That was fast. All right.
Well, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know how many they limited it to, but then they're going to be expanding that once.
Yeah.
Like they did on Android. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But look for, I guess they're getting closer and closer to a wide release. I don't know why you want to talk about this, but Crandroid.
Crandroid.
That's
I
what
like
I
that.
Call
well,
it.
Because when Windows falls to the floor, we're going to switch to doing Chromebook coverage. No, I think the interesting thing here is the parallels to what Microsoft has done.
Well, yeah, I was listening to TNT this morning, and that's exactly what came up is, will I be able to use an Android device as a desktop computer? Oh, well, Windows Phone does that already.
Yeah, I mean, and by the way, Apple too, right? I mean, Apple, you know, has always been very consistent about there's a line between the computers and these devices, but then you have the iPad Pro, and you're like, well, what is this thing? I mean, They're kind of blurring the lines.
Everybody's doing this.
Everyone's doing it. So Google sort of denied it. I don't think they actually denied anything. No. I think this report was accurate.
They didn't deny it.
Yeah.
All they denied was Chrome OS is not going to go away, which the Wall Street Journal story originally said it isn't going to go away.
Right. I went back and compared what they wrote, what they said, and same. Yeah. They really didn't add anything.
I think they wanted to correct the misimpression that some had that there would be but one OS.
I also think they wanted to not kill Chromebook sales right before Christmas.
Right. Right. Yep.
There's some nice ones. And there's a new Dell that's about $600. It's what I've always wanted, which is not a netbook Chromebook, not a really cheap, cruddy Chromebook.
So many like 11-inch Chromebooks. It's like, why does this thing have to be a Fisher-Price toy?
Yeah. They're plasticky.
I don't understand this. But kind of
a mid-range Chromebook that's kind of comparable, you know, to a mid-range Windows PC, but runs Chrome OS, and Dell's doing that now, and I think they look really nice.
It's fine. Different people have different needs. For the basics, I mean, I think the Chrome OS versus Android is sort of like, Surface, just the tablet versus Surface with a keyboard attached. I mean, it depends on what you're doing. I mean, sometimes one will work, and sometimes you need the keyboard. And I just... When they announced Chrome OS, I didn't understand what the point was because Chrome is a browser that can run on Android.
Right.
Why not just do that on Android? It was so much more mature already.
Right.
And it seems like they're going to kind of get it there. So welcome on board, Google. We welcome you to the future we've already embraced.
I've been playing. AMI has released something called Duos, which allows you to run Android on Windows.
Yeah.
Yep. And it works pretty well.
They harass me almost on a daily basis to review this product.
Yeah, well, I can review it. I'd put it on my Surface Book. Well, I mean, Android's not meant for a large screen.
Is it like
that.
An emulation thing? Or
yeah,
what
it's
is
an emulator.
Yeah, it's like a virtual machine.
It doesn't come with the Google apps, but you can download and install them, and then you have basically the equivalent of an Android phone on Windows, which means, you know what's great? It's like running Fallout Shelter, which is a really great phone, but on a small screen. I mean, really a great game, but on a small screen, it's not as playable. On my Surface Book, it's great. I love it.
That's great. I tried that thing on Surface 3 months ago, but I haven't put it on.
I can show you because I.
So it's usable. It plays. It runs quickly enough.
Yeah, the camera app doesn't work. There's things
that's
like
okay,
that.
But I mean, you wanted to run things like the Gmail app or.
I mean, it's at least as fast as an Android phone for that. Let me.
Yeah.
What's great is when you detach it, then it's like you have a massive...
Yeah, a massive Android tablet.
Hi. Hi. Looking for me? I'm right here. Is it the angle, you think? So I need to have it...
Yeah. It really depends on when... You got to think about when you set it up.
Right.
Like, where were you when you did it? Yeah. You know, what was that? Because if it's off, you know, it just doesn't see you as the same thing.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
It's
looking for me. Looking for you. Looking for me. Oh, well. You know, my... that was good. Somebody shifted it over so I wouldn't...
Yeah, smart.
Somebody out there is protecting me against myself.
It's like the guy that jumped in front of the bullet that was aimed at Reagan.
I turned on the... Do you want to switch to tablet mode? I turned on the Ask Me before I switch now.
That's a good tip.
Yep, because I kind of like that. So this is it. It's called Duos. It's going to take a while to launch, but... I've switched to tablet mode now. Mm-hmm. Now I don't know where to go. How do I get to the desktop? What happened? Where did I go? Can I just swipe over?
Swipe in from the left.
Swipe in from the left. There we go. Yeah, see, did you see that? Did you see it? I said...
Yeah, it's not loaded yet, so it's like it won't run.
Oh, I get it. But you can see it's saying Android.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. Anyway, you get the idea. There it is.
The problem is you can't see the desktop. So actually, just turn off tablet mode. Then you can.
Yeah, how do I do that?
Action Center. It's the thing that looks like a white square kind of. There you go. Top left button.
There you go. Yeah. Tablet mode. Okay, now
There we go. Now we can see it.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird having an Android on a 13-inch tablet.
Yeah.
But the touch works. Everything works. It's slow to boot. But Android's slow to boot, too. So, and it's like $15. 30 days.
Yeah, I noticed that. On the Moto X, you know, when you reboot that thing.
It takes forever.
It goes through screens. Like, there are animations. And
yeah, isn't that cool? that's to
distract it takes forever. It's like, what's going on here?
That's
like
to distract you. Yeah. So, now I'm in Android. I swipe up. And the problem is I'm using the desktop from, like, a phone. So, yep. Playing Fallout Shelter at this size is phenomenal. It's really great. Suddenly it becomes like a desktop game.
Yeah, what's cool is, of course, these things are written to high DPI displays because a lot of phones have them.
Right.
So even at this size, it looks great.
Oh, yeah, it's not artifacted or
anything. It's not like 320 by 240 or
right,
whatever.
Right, exactly, yeah. I'll create a new vault. All right. Great vault. The sound works. Sound sounds great. It's cool.
It's funny.
I keep wanting to swipe. You got to remember this is now an Android device.
Fallout 4 is...
It's a week off. A week from today, I won't be here. Sorry.
No, is it?
I'll be playing Fallout 4. Yeah, baby. Oh, by the way, nice to have the pen when you're doing this because some of the touch targets are kind of small.
Nice.
But the pen really makes it very easy to use. So, yeah, it's kind of cool. That's my tip of the week. But your tip of the week, software of the week, and all of that coming up in just a moment. But first, a word from our sponsor. Linda.com. Oh, I love Linda. Doesn't Linda in Spanish mean beautiful? Oh, sorry. Fallout Shelter's running. I gotta turn that off. It's a really awesome game on a big screen. Linda's the place to go if you love to learn, and I know you do, whether it's you want to get better at Microsoft Office or maybe your hobby. Maybe your hobby's photography or coding or design or music. Lynda.com has something for everybody. Over 43,000 on-demand courses now in every area of technology, even business, like soft business skills like negotiation and resume building. Go to lynda.com/windows and find out more about the courses Linda has out there. Some of the business courses include communications tips, creating a business plan, executive decision making. I could use that. Sales management fundamentals, avoiding burnout. They have a weekly series called Monday Productivity Pointers, where each installment gives you a quick tip on a tool that'll help you run your life and business more efficiently. The nice thing about Lynda.com is you don't have to decide now what you want to study. You pay a flat rate every month, and that gives you access to every single course. Every single course at Lynda.com. It's a great way to learn. I've been using the photography courses. But, you know, my real hobby is programming, of all things. And it's a great place to, if you have a hobby, to kind of learn. So they have a whole bunch of developer. Let's go to the developer section. A whole bunch of developer courses in a variety, huge variety. Foundations of Programming Fundamentals, PHP with MySQL Essential Training, databases, object-oriented design, creating a game environment with Blender and Unity. I mean, they get really granular in here. C Sharp 6.0, a first look. I mean, Visual Studio 2015. Oh, that's another thing, by the way. They work with publishers like Microsoft so that when new versions of apps come out, they've already got training ready day and date. This is a great one for me. Building a note-taking app for iOS 9 with Swift, it actually gets you from beginning to end. It walks you right through it. Mathematica 10 Advanced Analysis. That up and running with Google Apps Script. C# interfaces and generics. There's even an Apple Watch course, building a calculator for Apple Watch. Take you from beginning to end, from knowing nothing to actually having your very own watch app running. Improving visual force performance. So here's the deal. Go to lynda.com and you could try it free for 10 days. lynda.com/windows. The run of the place. You can go from beginning to end. That's enough time to do a whole course if you're devoted. Or, you know, say you want to learn more about Visual Studio 2015, you can search right into the transcript and find that thing you're trying to learn. It's just an awesome resource for everybody who loves to learn. I want you to become a member today. Go to Lynda, Lynda.com/windows. 10 days free. It's the best teachers. Great production on these videos. You'll learn, you'll grow, and you'll have a lot of fun doing it. Lynda.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Paul Theriot, Mary Jo Foley. Let's kick things off in the back of the book with Paul's, is it a tip or software this week? It's a
little bit of both. I've got tips and software.
Yay.
I actually have three tips, so I'll try to go quickly. One is with the release last week of the Arrow app launcher. Did we talk about this like last week? I can't remember.
I don't think so.
So there's a Microsoft Garage team that made the Next lock screen for Android, which is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've made an Android app launcher replaces the home screen called Arrow. You could get Cortana and replace Google Now. You get a bunch of Microsoft apps.
You got
apps,
a Windows phone.
You get a Windows phone, exactly. So throw this stuff all together. So the tip is kind of you could turn an Android phone into a Microsoft phone. And
wow,
if you're wondering what Plan B looks like, I think we're starting to see it come together here. No, so that's interesting. I just wanted to remind people, because it was the beginning of November, that Games with Gold is back. This month is kind of extra special because if you have an Xbox One, all of the Xbox 360 games they'll be giving away for free this month will work in emulation mode or backwards compatibility mode on Xbox One with that new Xbox One experience that's coming next week. So get those games too, and you'll be able to play them on your Xbox One. And then finally, the third tip is you may remember the Work and Play bundle. This is the Microsoft offering that they have through their retail store that ties together Office 365 Home, Skype, Wi-Fi, and Unlimited World, Xbox Live Gold. And this year they've changed up a little bit, but they're also including an Assure support plan, which is normally $150 a year, by the way, and a $60 bonus gift card to Microsoft's online store, so like the Xbox store, the Windows store, the Windows Phone store. And you get all this stuff for, how much is it? to $149. Which is incredible. I mean, just Office 365 Home is normally $99. And so for the price of, less than the price of just Office 365 Home and Xbox Live Gold, you get all the extra stuff. The support plan, $60 gift card, and the Wi-Fi and Skype Unlimited World, which is incredible. If you add that stuff up, I think I have it in here somewhere, it's like a savings of $225. Am I on the right one? It's over $200. It's a lot of money. So that's cool. All right. And that's only at the Microsoft store online, I believe. I'm not sure if you can get that in the retail stores, but definitely at the Microsoft store. And then the software pick of the week is something I've been dying to talk about. I have a video. I don't know if you can play this. There's a if you click on the trailer link, it's a video of the play experience. But this is a guy who has been coming to our meetups for a couple of years, and he showed me this game. He got me on the beta last year. He's been working on it and working on it and working on it. I keep saying, why don't you just release this thing? It's called Ariel's World. It's only 99 cents. It's awesome. It's for Windows Phone. It's a, like a Mario style
side scroller.
It's so great. Great graphics, great sound, great play. It's been so tuned. I mean, over time, he's worked on it forever. And if you care about Windows Phone and the platform and want to support a developer who's really kind of gone to bat for it, check this thing out. It's called Ariel's World. And you can get it now on Windows Phone.
It is. It's very much like Mario, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's neat. It's really, really great. By the way, speaking of Amiga, I mean, today we have first-person shooters. Back in the Amiga day, the big thing was the side-scrollers. And a lot of them came out of the UK. A lot of titles that people here in the United States wouldn't have been very familiar with, but that I just kind of loved because I was really into this stuff. And this, to me, reminds me of like a Psygnosis. Like Leander was kind of a sideways scroller. It wasn't a big deal in the US. I'm sure it was a bigger deal in England or whatever. But it's just such a classic side scroller. It's a great game. So please do check that out.
And is that it? Is that everything?
That's everything.
That's it all? All right, then it's time for our Enterprise Pick of the Week with Mary Jo Foley, Enterprise Gal.
This is an Enterprise Pick of the Week that I just was stunned to be able to talk about because it's been a long time in coming. Today, Microsoft announced that Red Hat Enterprise Linux is going to run on Azure.
What?
Wow.
What?
It's surprising because Red Hat was the holdout, or Microsoft was the holdout. It's not really clear who was holding this up, but Microsoft already has a bunch of different Linux distributions available on Azure, including Ubuntu and CentOS and Oracle Linux and SUSE. And the one everybody kept asking about was Red Hat. They're like, what about Red Hat Enterprise Linux? Well, today they, I guess, have finally put aside their differences, and it's going to be on Azure in the coming weeks, as is JBoss, Red Hat's middleware platform. There was a whole bunch of other pieces to this announcement, including Microsoft bringing .NET to Red Hat's OpenShift platform as a service. It's just kind of like the two have buried the hatchet. The one interesting thing about this partnership that they announced today is there was no mention of patents or, Microsoft saying that Red Hat infringed or didn't infringe, and that just was not mentioned at all. So I think that must have been part of the way that they ended up coming to terms here, was to just kind of bury that part.
Somebody just invented a new slogan. Azure does what?
That would be a better campaign than the PC one.
Azure does what? Red Hat. That's awesome.
And I have a second enterprise pick, since Paul did a couple picks. I definitely want to make sure there people know about this, because it's coming up on December 1st. And that is, Microsoft will be making the newest version of Office 365 available as of that date. This is the E5 plan, which they announced back in the summer. And so this is the highest end Office 365 plan. It has all the latest stuff, like the Skype for Business features around Cloud PBX, Power BI Pro, Delve Organizational Analytics. If you're in a business that wants all the latest and greatest stuff from Microsoft in Office 365, you are going to want E5. We don't know the price yet. I'm sure it will be more than E4, which is $22 per user per month. And if you are on E4, which is getting replaced by E5, Microsoft tells me that E4 is going to stay on the price list till June 30th next year. So don't feel like you have to rush to go to E5. So that's the second pick.
And now we go to the Boulevard.
Oh, wait. The code,
code name. Yes.
This, okay. If you want a little fun comic relief this week with all the, drown your OneDrive sorrows, you have got to check out this video. This is a Channel 9 video. Raymond Chen, who's really famous at Microsoft for his blog, he does a lot around Microsoft code names and Microsoft history. They took Raymond Chen. The Channel 9 team took him to the Microsoft archives. And there really is a Microsoft archive on campus where they have all the memorabilia from all different teams and products. And it's Raymond Chen going through all the Windows 95 and Windows NT stuff and talking about all the code names that he remembers, like Tukwila and Neptune and Chicago and O'Hare. It's Raymond totally worth watching this. It's the best. And he's such a funny guy, too.
Which one is he in the middle?
No, the one on the right.
He's the guy on the right in the suit. He works for the Windows team, and he wears a suit to work every day.
He looks very serious. He's funny?
Yeah.
He is funny.
Yeah, he's great. He talks at a lot of the Microsoft developer shows. He's great. He's fantastic. I don't know what's going on with the guy in the middle.
Yeah, he looks funny.
He looks like one of the Batman villains from Gotham or something.
He'd be the funny guy, yeah.
No, Raymond Chen, they bring him in there, and they let him tour around, and he talks about all these things he donated, and there's all kinds of cool things in there. So, yeah. It's worth a look if you like code names. It wasn't by marketers.
Oh, this
the
is
DOS
a
is operation? Dead tombstone.
Yeah, they were a little premature on that one.
Yeah,
yeah.
As Andrew Schulman can tell you.
How do I get the, just out of curiosity, is there a way to get Edge to get rid of all the Chrome, the UI on Edge and just to go full screen?
No, Leo.
You asked so many questions.
Yeah. That would be so nice. Really, the answer is no.
Not yet.
I know. It's unbelievable. Yeah, so
this was, Chicago, my kind of software.
Yep.
I love it that they have this museum. I didn't know. Have you been in there?
No, I've never been in there. I don't know if it's open to the public or even the press.
No, I don't think it's. I think what they do is sometimes they put it out, parts of it out in little displays.
Oh, yeah, because it looks like there's offices in the back there. This is like.
Yeah, I don't think they. This is not something that's just open. Yeah. This should be, though. A little Smithsonian for Microsoft.
Oh, man. It's so cute.
Yep.
So cool.
Cairo is an awful long way, but we can make it to Chicago.
So code name Bonanza.
Oh, yeah. Yep. He talks about everything, and including a couple. Paul may have known about some of them, but I didn't realize Neptune The NNT. Oh,
I had builds of Neptune. Neptune was the real
thing.
Did
you know it was because of NT, like Neptune?
Neptune,
yeah.
I didn't know that. I never put that together that it was
Tuck
really
Will is the best one, though, because remember, the goal was to get to Cairo, right?
Yep.
And so Chicago was some certain part of the way to Cairo. Tukwila is like way. 2 miles away from Redmond. So the idea was we're not very close at all with this release. You know, it's I think it was NT351 was Tukwila.
Yeah, I think
if
so.
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, I like the code. That back then, the code names were awesome.
They were.
Cairo. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cairo was the dream.
They never got to Cairo.
They never got to Cairo.
Never got
We're still waiting for that distributed database file system thing that they were talking about. Object-oriented file system.
Tukwila, I believe, is where we are.
We're still, we're in somewhere in West Montana.
This is fun. And then they're, this is another part of the library where they have a lot of stuff on the shelves. These are all the...
Yeah, they have all the old, a copy of like every product that they ever made.
It's like the most boring bookstore you've ever been to.
I disagree. This is an awesome bookstore.
Look how big it is.
It's huge.
Golly.
Yeah, it's huge. They have computers in there. They had the original machine that was running NT on MIPS, I believe. They actually have the server in there.
Wow.
Oh, this is... Yeah, and he's all excited because he amazing. Knows all this stuff. Yeah, it's a really cool place. I would love to go in there sometime.
Yeah. Wait, why don't we do a show there?
I know, that'd be cool.
Let's do that. That's cool. So that video is on channel9.msdn.com. Defrag Tools, episode 143. Don't be fooled by the name of the show.
Right. I know, it sounds so terrible.
Nothing to do with defragging.
Yeah, no. Wow. Hey, although every one of those products supported defragging.
You don't need to defrag anymore, do you? No. No, I didn't think so. Ew. I think modern operating systems handle that for you. Kind of.
I used to sit there and watch Norton, you know, little colored boxes.
Well, that was
line
a fun
up,
thing.
It made me feel really good about myself.
It was like cleaning your room. And at the end, it was like all in one spot. And then there was...
Oh, that was obviously the right thing to do.
Obviously.
You could have been doing nothing to my hard drive. I have no idea. But the boxes moved around.
I do remember in the days of Windows 95, you did have to defrag because it really would get sluggish. But I can't anything NT-based, and for sure Windows 7, 8, and 10, you don't need to defrag anymore. People sell defrag utilities.
You do actually technically need to defrag. It's just that the system does it for you now. And then, of course, on an SSD, it's not the same.
And yeah, you definitely don't want to defrag an SSD. That's a good way to burn it up if you could do anything. Well, let's have some beer, Mary Jo. What do you say? Now we go to the Boulevard.
Yep. So my beer pick is a collaboration beer. In fact, the name is Collaboration Number 5. It's a tropical pale ale. So it's got citrusy hops, but it also tastes a lot like tropical fruit, even though there's none in it. And the reason I picked this beer is because of who the brewers are. Boulevard is from Kansas City. And yes, I live in New York, and I was a Mets fan. We got to give them their props.
That's
they won.
That's big of you. That's really big of you.
Yeah. So Boulevard and Cigar City. Cigar City is from Florida. They got together and they brewed this beer. It's really worth trying if you can find it. A very interesting collab by two really good brewers.
That's kind of fun.
Why did I think Boulevard was from Chicago?
I think we saw a lot of it when we were in Chicago.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Yeah. Yep.
So you're a Mets fan, Mary Jo? Were you a little disheartened?
Well, I'm just a fair weather fan. You know, when somebody's
the Yankees.
Playing.
Oh, so you are a Mets fan then?
Exactly.
Somebody told me, and I don't know if this is true, but I like the story that the reason the Mets colors are orange and blue is for the Giants and the Dodgers, who both, of course, left New York City to go west.
Oh, really? Is that true?
And then Mets came after as an expansion team. And they have orange.
Talk about
Giants.
Lighting a candle. I mean, give it a break.
Yeah, it's really. Like 1957 they left? It's been a while.
Yeah. Oh, and we have one more beer-related thing to talk about.
Yes, we do.
The end of the world is coming.
Yes, the end of the world is coming. So Paul and I are going to be doing a Windows Weekly tweet-up in London on November 20th. And we now have our place. It's called The World's End, a very famous pub in Camden. 5 to 8 p.m. There, we're going to be there. And we've got a Eventbrite RSVP page you can sign up on. And it's not obligatory, but we're just trying to get a rough head count. So we'll be tweeting that out. And we have to say thanks to Michael Gillett and Guy Gregory. Michael did a really awesome graphic for us with the Ninja Cat that we're going to be tweeting out for the tweet up. And they both helped us secure the place and get the Eventbrite going. So thank you, guys. And hopefully we're going to see a lot of Windows Weekly fans in London on the 20th.
You guys have fans all over the world. It's always fun. And they're great people, too. The Windows Weekly fans are great people. Like
I'm going to be bringing London news from the colonies.
Just don't bring them tea. I understand they have plenty.
Bring tea, right.
Yeah, or beer. Right. I want to thank Philip and Andrew who are in studio today. I don't know if they're fans of Windows Weekly. They were just forced to listen to a couple of hours of it anyway.
Sorry about that.
Philip's from Maryland. Andrew is from New Jersey. And they are now Windows users.
Whether they want to be or not.
They want to be or not. Philip works in IT for an insurance company. I'm thinking he probably is doing a little Windows coding, a little bit. Hey, thank you for all of you for being here. We do the show every Wednesday. That's at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC, if you want to listen live. If you can't, you don't have to worry because, my goodness, we've got many on-demand venues for you. You can listen at twit.tv/WW or watch. We've got video, too, or wherever your podcasts are, including, podcast clients on Windows and Windows Phone. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com, Thurrott. We need a jingle.
Somebody it's writes, like that episode of the IT Crowd where they replaced 911 or whatever with some
with
incredibly
really long number.
Yeah.
They have a jingle, but it doesn't help. Thurrott
7 or whatever. He'd like the last
7-6-4-3-9-9-4-5-2-1-7-2-9.
Just like the way they ended. Yeah.
Mary Jo Foley is at allaboutmicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog. And she is also on the Twitter at Mary Jo Foley. Paul's at Thurrott. We thank you for being here. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.